And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. So much to get to tonight. Glad to be back in the studio. Last night, Pat Lamar sat in. As we're getting ready for our week away in Pittsburgh, we'll be in Pittsburgh all next week, broadcasting from the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO convention as they talk about the issues that I think are extremely important to working people across the Commonwealth, which is why I think we need to be there to find out, hey, what's going on? How do we stop what's going on? And how do we make things better for tomorrow? So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be an excellent opportunity to get out and talk to a bunch of working folks about, you know, how we should be moving our state, our country forward. That's something that seems to be getting lost, billionaire-focused politic that we're forced-fed every day. And we're going to talk about that today, the big Supreme Court decision. Our good friend and regular contributor here at the program, Attorney Erwin Aronson, will be here to give us a little bit on that. Also, in the second hour, we're going to talk with Michael Tichini. He is the field director for Health Gap Group about what's going to happen on the 4th. Now, as you know, April 4th is the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, down there marching for economic justice, down there marching with sanitation workers who just wanted to have decent, safe conditions, a reasonable wage. And, you know, last summer when we took our labor history tour, the thing that grabbed me is that those sanitation workers, those guys that King marched with and died marching with, they still don't have a pension. And you hear the radical right here going, oh, there are these public sector pension millionaires. It's ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. Also in the second hour, we're going to talk with Ashley Corby. She's the owner of a small restaurant, bar, brewery here in the local area. Going to talk about her fight to keep up with the big chains who are taking over and local content. I'm a big believer in local establishments, local ownership, local control, and, of course, money staying local, creating local jobs, all of that. We'll talk to her about the Market Cross Pub's 20th anniversary and the celebration that's going on around that, plus their charity golf outing. We'll talk about that. And in the third hour, Brad Friedman from Brad Blog is going to be here to talk about, we're going to begin playing the green news that his group puts out, and also going to talk about voter suppression and the Supreme Court decision. Balls and strikes. Anybody remember balls and strikes? And of course, we're going to take your thoughts, your questions, your comments, whatever's on your mind tonight. Whether you think this is a good idea or not, is money speech? Should the guy with the biggest pile of cash, should he be the one who has the loudest megaphone? Should the guy who can afford the PA system, is he the one who should be heard? And for me, when I look at this decision, because you remember, and I do, I guess that's my problem. Memory still functioning. Hopefully, at some point, maybe the memory doesn't function as well. Maybe I can then have some form of amnesia, maybe some form of dementia, so I don't remember that John Roberts said, oh, stare decisis, balls and strikes. Yeah, Citizens United, anything but balls and strikes. And this decision today, this, again, another really rich guy who has spent a lot of money going after the Federal Election Commission because he believed his voice was being hampered because he couldn't spend unlimited amounts of money. And, of course, today, I don't know if you've heard it, but today our activist conservative judges, I love that, activist judges, when the real activists have always been on the radical right-wing side of things. Another 5-4 decision. And look, I don't think anybody who pays attention is surprised that you have a 5-4 decision on just about everything that goes on. So we have another one of these 5-4 decisions written by the Chief Justice, Mr. Balls and Strikes himself, John Roberts, that the limits on the total money that these big donors can give, unconstitutional. Limiting that speech. Because as we all know, and I'm sure you know, that dollar bill is my speech. Now, that's what Citizens United brought us. This idea that somehow, by restricting the amount of money in our political process, somehow that is the end of the free speech rights of our very, very wealthy. Now, the decision leaves in place the base limits on what can be given to individual campaigns. And as I was thinking about that wording in the USA Today article, that, you know, it's in place of what can be given to the campaigns. And I'm going, really, aren't campaigns going to be almost, you know, individual candidate campaigns kind of irrelevant when you're looking at these massive super PACs and this huge money being spent? There's part of me that goes, you know, when the Koch brothers spend, I think it was like 15 times more than the RNC spent on issue ads, you go, is the party matter anymore? We now have one party, and it's the billionaire party. It's the people who can afford to buy the TV ads. And I see this, and I go, Comcast has got to be doing backflips in the streets. Anybody who has Comcast stock, and I didn't check this today, and I should have, I wonder what happened to Comcast stocks. And not just them, all of these handful of media conglomerates who control our nation's airwaves. They got to be thrilled, because that's where the money's going to go, right? It's all in, all that money's going to go into our ears and on our eyes, because they're going to inundate us with their message. And here in this November election, this is going to be huge, because, you know, as a number of commentators said, it could possibly have an influence in this November election. Do you think, really? Do you really think that it could have an effect, dumping tons more money into the process? Do you think it could matter? Now, the justice who wrote the minority opinion, the losing opinion, the dissent, if you will, Justice Stephen Breyer, who no fancy pants liberal by any stretch of the imagination, said that the decision understates the importance of protecting the political integrity of our governmental institutions. He writes, taken together with Citizens United versus Federal Elections Commission, today's decision eviscerates our nation's campaign finance laws, leaving a remnant incapable of dealing with the grave problems of democratic legitimacy that those laws were intended to resolve. Again, the premise being here that money equals speech. This is what it is. You got this rich guy, Alabama businessman, says, I want to be able to spend my money wherever I want, and spends a bunch of money to do it, to go after this. And like, I guess just like anything else, got what he wanted. I find it interesting that Roberts, being the moderate, didn't go as far as Clarence Thomas wanted to go. Clarence said that he would have gone much further and completely struck down any of the spending limits that were brought on by the 1976 case, Buckley versus Viejo. Because Clarence and his wife, you know, Americans for Prosperity, I mean, do you see a theme here? Or am I the only one that kind of sees this? Am I the only one who sees the theme that you go, there's a problem? Hello, Houston. We have a problem. And the problem is way too much money in our political system. Way too much. I like the fact that the Center for Responsive Politics did a study of the 2012 elections. And what they found, understand, money equals speech is what they're telling us. What they found is 1.3 million people in this country donated $200 or more to federal candidates. Just 1.3 million people. To me, that's not an inclusive club. That's 1.3 million people out of 320 million people. I mean, you're talking a very small number of interest people. They gave the federal candidates these party committees or PACs last year. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, only about 600 people in this entire country, 600 people hit that $123,000 cap. What this decision does away with. You're talking about the voices of 600 of our wealthiest people in this country. And why would somebody who, and you know what the answer is, why would these 600 people want to have the ability to give as much money as possible? Well, if money's speech, and all of those people, those voters, have equal voice, the very well-to-do, they don't stand really a chance. But if money is speech and money equals votes, because the people who need the money to get to the voters have to go through you to get it. Look at the Sheldon Adelson weekend. Anybody pay attention to that? Anybody this past weekend to the Sheldon primary where everybody went with, you know, bowing to this billionaire? Because, oh, he's going to give money, and we need money. We need lots of it. I mean, is anybody freaked out by that? I mean, really, are you really concerned that you've got all of the people who are the Republicans who are going to be presidential candidates or thinking about being presidential candidates or even considering going hat in hand on their knees being subjected to Sheldon, the Sheldon primary? Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the one who just doesn't quite get it. And I guess I kind of agree with Bernie Sanders, who, you know, says this is basically an abomination. He was asked about what this mean. He says, you know, freedom of speech, in my view, does not mean freedom to buy the United States government. Sanders said that, you know, what's going to probably end up happening is you're going to give billionaires like the Koch brothers unfettered access to the airwaves for campaigns, all the campaign blasting, and the candidates themselves, so the game is already rigged. Bernie said, what world are the five conservative Supreme Court justices living in? To equate the ability of billionaires to buy election with freedom of speech is totally absurd. Bernie Sanders said the Supreme Court is paving the way toward an oligarchic form of society in which a handful of billionaires like the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson will control our political process. And I even look at Bernie and go, Bernie, where have you been? They're doing it. It's been going on. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on this? Is the Sheldon primary a good idea? Is giving the ability of the billionaire class to rule our country a good idea? Because there are some who believe, and look, I've talked to some people who go, well, they're rich. They know how to do things. They run businesses. They can run government. Because, look, the rich people have spent so much money telling us how badly government is broken and how there's those public sector pension millionaires. So I'm asking you, and I'd love to hear your thoughts and your opinions on this, because it's one of those things that just, I look at this and I go, what rational mind goes, yeah, it's a good idea. I've yet to find too many of them. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. A monster out to maul federal workers. That's how American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. describes the latest budget proposal from Republican Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan. Cox called the budget an insatiable monster, not content with the $138 billion it's already extracted from federal workers through pay freezes and other cuts. Cox calls Ryan's new budget morally repulsive and intellectually dishonest. Ryan's budget would require more money from federal worker take-home pay to be diverted to their pensions, amounting to a 6% cut in take-home pay. It would also take money out of the federal retirement system and put it into a 401k-style plan. There are other unspecified cuts to federal employee pay and benefits as well. The Ryan budget would cut $5.1 trillion from the federal budget over 10 years. Two women who say they were McDonald's managers for years are saying that they participated in wage theft from McDonald's workers, and it was systematic. In a video posted on YouTube, Kwanzaa Brooks said in part,
I think the worst thing that I was ever asked to do would be to really adjust a person's time. That is the worst, because they did the work. They were there. And they deserve to get paid for what they did. It's a job. It's not right. It's not fair.
Lakia Williams says she was a McDonald's manager for years as well, and she describes how managers stole wages from workers.
On several occasions, had employees come and work either before their shift or either stay after their shift. I've had employees literally clock out to work because they were either going into overtime or labor was getting extremely high, and we had to balance it.
A national poll of fast food workers shows 89% of them report having wages illegally taken from them. The Hart Research poll surveyed 1,008 fast food workers in 10 cities. The China Labor Bulletin says Walmart workers in Chengdu are standing firm on their demand for a doubling of compensation offered by Walmart as the store there closes. Walmart has made a lesser offer and it's trying to get workers to accept that. But the Chengdu Walmart trade union is urging the workers to stand firm and not be tempted by unripe fruit. The Chinese Walmart workers demanded collective bargaining with the Chinese Walmart store after management announced March 4th that the store was closing. When the closing was announced, the workers were told to accept layoffs or move to another store, but they organized to demand compensation for the closing.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
An innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck. Between a rock and a hard place.
Oh, yeah, lawyers, guns, and money, and especially the money part, especially if it's the Sheldon Adelson money. And it still blows my mind that we seem to be okay with the Sheldon primary 2 years away from the election season, and I didn't see all that much outrage. Oh, yeah, let the future possible presidents go and kiss the ring of our casino titan. Somehow, I'm the only one. I don't know. But I agree with Bernie Sanders. It's absurd what the Supreme Court has done. As he pointed out, what world are the five Supreme Court justices living in? To equate the ability of billionaires to buy elections with freedom of speech? Totally, totally absurd. Which is why I've asked our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson, to come explain this nonsense to us. Irwin, thanks for taking time for me.
Good to be here, Rick. How are you?
I am good. I'm not surprised. I got to be honest. This does not surprise me, given the guy who claimed he was going to call balls and strikes. It was decided law, balls and strikes. We're not going to overturn anything. In light of Citizens United, I got to be honest, not surprised.
Well, I'm not surprised either, but I am thunderstruck. It's intriguing that you recall Mr. Justice Roberts, the chief, having made that comment about just calling balls and strikes, seeing the law as it is and not doing anything. This is the most activist court that has existed in my lifetime. These people who suggest that the Warren Court that recognized the longstanding constitutional rights of criminals, for example, to, you know, little things like a right to counsel and the right to have your rights read to you before you're interrogated. the Warren Court that came up with those decisions and Brown versus Board of Education that allowed integration of our schools and things like that was called an activist court. That court has nothing on the Roberts Court. This guy calls balls and strikes, as he said he would, based on how much cash the pitcher has. And it's just that simple. This is a shocking decision. I don't know how well our listeners really know what the impact of this decision is, because this is a narrowly focused piece of the Federal Election Act, and it's so foreign to most people that people don't know about it, because what it spoke about and what was deemed unconstitutional under the First Amendment free speech right by this Supreme Court today was a Federal Election Commission rule that adjusts for inflation every year, that made it impermissible, for one individual to give more than, in this current year, $48,600 to federal candidates and an additional $74,600 to federal political action committees and federal political party committees. So that's...
And what was the point of that? Why would they want to do that?
The reason they want to do that is to keep people from buying elections.
Ah!
You know, we're supposed to have free speech rights that allow us to be equal in the eyes of the law. Not equal based on how big your checkbook is. So, I mean, but listen to what I said. I mean, that is $123,000+ a year that one person was limited in giving in the aggregate to federal candidates only. It has nothing to do with candidates outside of the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate and candidates for president. That's it. So, you know, that is a dizzyingly small number when we talk about the 1%. This is a Supreme Court ruling for, of, and by the 1%. So all of that stuff that we learned in ninth grade civics class attributable to Abraham Lincoln about a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, just became government of the checkbook, by the checkbook, and for the checkbook. Brought to you by our Supreme Court, who, of course, told us with Citizens United that corporations are people. I was with a colleague earlier this evening who said that I'll only believe that corporations are people when you can execute one.
Yep. I keep saying that. When Texas kills one, we'll start talking about it.
Yeah. So it's a sad day. It's a sad day for democracy.
You know, one of the things that couple of the articles that I had read pointed out is the take on it, the spin on it seems to be that this is going to, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, that this is going to reinvigorate campaigns. And it's going to move us away from the PACs and all of the other outside of the party movement that's been going on these last couple of years, that this is going to actually influence the campaigns directly, and candidates will be able to take control of their campaigns. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, candidates won't have to take control of their campaigns. One or two wealthy people will take control of their campaigns for them and guide them and push them and advocate for them and twist them and turn them and destroy us in the process. One of the realities of American politics for decades had been that working people who could aggregate their money together had a fair shot at maybe somewhat group-based equal access. That's been eviscerated in this decision. We simply cannot compete with the unbridled billions of casino magnates like Stuart Adelson, who had his private road show in Las Vegas this past weekend with the Republican candidates or would-be candidates for president marching by his hotel, or the Koch brothers and their billions that they are spending to manipulate political outcomes. At least until now, with this decision and with the Citizens United decision of 2 years ago, until that point in history, the federal election regulatory framework adopted by the Congress of the United States with the support, by the way, of Democrats and Republicans. This was not something that was dropped from on high. This was a bipartisan legal framework. There was some limitation on the purchase of public officials. That has been eliminated. Just eliminated. What really needs to happen is that we take money out of politics altogether, that there should be public financing of political campaigns, that candidates for public office should be prohibited from accepting contributions, except possibly the smallest of all possible contributions from individuals only. And then, and only then, will our politics be based on public policy, not corporate largesse. But until we reach that time, we have to deal with the reality of the Supreme Court and deal with the reality that we have one thing that money can't buy, and that is our numbers. Each of us, Stuart Adelson or Rick Smith, has exactly one vote. And there are more of us than there are Stuarts.
And that's what I was going to ask you about, because at some point, doesn't all of this money eventually turn people to going, wait a second, if this is what I'm being spoon-fed by the Koch brothers and by Sheldon Adelson and by all of these other billionaires, the Sean McCutcheons and all of these other people, isn't there some backlash? Isn't there a visceral reaction to this where we go, no, we're going the other way?
Well, that's what we have to work toward, and that's what we have to hope for. This is shocking. I confess to you that I got an advance copy of the decision early this morning with my advance sheets that I read every day of, you know, decisions of the judiciary. That's part of my daily work, and it haunted me all day after I read the opinion and the dissents, and most significantly, the concurring opinion of Mr. Justice Thomas, who argued not only that McCutcheon was right and that the limitations needed to be stricken,
but didn't go far enough.
But the decision didn't go far enough, exactly. And it's shocking. It's shocking that this man is on this court and has betrayed everything we have a right to believe in.
But is it surprising? I mean, his wife worked for Americans for Prosperity. I mean, well, there are ties there.
What's surprising is that I'm still enough of a Pollyanna to believe that these people are indeed above all of this. And they're not. I know what they're supposed to be, but they don't make it. And it's very, very heartbreaking. I wish I could say it some other way. What this decision is what's known as a plurality decision. There were not five justices that voted for the same thing. There were four that voted against it, and there were five that voted to find that the Federal Election Act limitation was unconstitutional, but they reached that decision for varying reasons. So we don't really know exactly what the decision means in a precedential sense, other than we know it means that the limitation is eliminated. And that's significant for a whole other reason. In Pennsylvania, we do not have, at the state level, any limitations on political contributions.
Right.
I guess Pennsylvania is ahead of the curve and anticipated this crazy Supreme Court. But intriguingly enough, in Philadelphia, for example, for local municipal elections, for city council, for city controller, for treasurer, for those various local offices, there are indeed, or were until today, campaign contribution limitations within the city of Philadelphia. My read of this decision is that those are eliminated as well. And so that's quite significant.
So it throws all of that into chaos. And in one of the articles that I read, it says the District of Columbia and 12 other states, you know, Connecticut, the Wyoming,
yeah.
That this would erode their contribution limits as well. So they couldn't, even because they had them, now no more, it's gone.
That's correct. That would be my interpretation as well. And
so what happened to local control, states' rights? What happened to that?
Well, all of a sudden, those people who are such grand advocates of states' rights, when it's convenient for them in terms of screwing children out of their access to an education or screwing workers out of having a voice over how their paychecks after they're earned are expended, are the people who are saying now that the federal government has occupied the field and federal preemption exists when it comes to regulating elections because free speech, all of a sudden, they are the great advocates and protectors of free speech. So it's a very, very strange and brave new world. Just a couple of weeks ago, and I think we may have mentioned this on an earlier program, litigation was instituted to strike down Pennsylvania's state election law prohibition on corporate treasury contributions to political committees for independent expenditures. And the federal courts have now enjoined the enforcement of that aspect of the law as well. So we have this visiting us as we go into a gubernatorial election cycle. So-called independent expenditures may be made by corporations by contributions from corporations, hidden corporation contributions to so-called independent political committees that will certainly be showing up in our election cycle this coming November in the gubernatorial race, in the legislative and state senate races, and so on as well. So this is a very, very trying time for the people. And I wish I could say otherwise. It's not a good day.
Which is why the right to vote, and going back and looking at protecting that precious right to vote, it was so important over the last couple of years. And as the right and as the same forces try and put roadblocks in front of our right to vote, why it's so important right now to be fighting back even harder.
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. In one sort of bright moment in an otherwise very troublesome day, I had the occasion to have a conversation with a couple of my colleagues earlier today with whom I had the opportunity to work during the voter ID litigation that we've talked about so much in the past. And we were reminding one another about how important that work was now, in particular, in the face of this decision, because they tried to steal our right to vote, that most foundational of all of our rights. And now they're trying to marginalize our right to vote by giving more power to dollars than they do to voters in a democracy. So it was uplifting for me to be able to be reminded by a couple of my colleagues about the significance of the work we did and do on this voter protection issue and how very special it is that the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO and its affiliated unions, from the building trades to the public sector unions, AFSCME and SEIU, to the needle trades to the industrial unions, even all the way to the longshore industry and the Screen Actors Guild and professional athletes unions, all banded together to protect voting rights when we had the voter ID litigation, and how forward-thinking it was for them to be involved, knowing as we know now that the Supreme Court has just all but fundamentally assaulted the rights of individual voters for a preference toward money. So,
well, let me ask you this, because you brought up a different number of union groups. One of the things that I keep hearing is that, well, this is good for the unions as well, because, you know, they can give money too, because, you know, they're filling the coffers and they're spending billions of dollars.
Well, I wish that the unions as a group had billions of dollars to spend. That would be quite wonderful, but all of the money that was spent politically by unions in the last presidential election cycle, all of it together, throughout the entirety of the United States, didn't equal what Adelson invested personally, individually.
So you're So you're talking about a labor movement of what, some 18 million families across this country?
Right.
They didn't have the economic might of just one casino magnate.
That's correct. That's correct. And if we add to that just the Koch brothers, so we multiply it by roughly times two, we've already been outspent 2-1. And that doesn't count the literally billions of dollars that come in from other corporate magnates and from the rest of the 1% buying their way to the best government money can buy.
You know, my grandfather always said if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, simply because the rich guy understands return on investment. So when you see them wanting to spend millions of dollars, you got to wonder how much is in it for them on the other side.
Well, I think Adelson is the greatest possible example. You know, he can either spend, you know, several hundred million dollars to build himself a gaming license somewhere, or he can buy himself a politician for maybe as much as $1 million and get that money back in days. We see it every day with the charter school operators and, you know,
and
how little they have to invest to get a permanent income of tax dollars.
And the drillers who didn't pay a tax. I mean, $1 million to a gubernatorial candidate and eventual governor got them hundreds of millions of dollars in rewards.
Right. And it's not just the hundreds of millions of dollars from the extraction that hasn't been taxed, but once they get their permits for their wells, that's forever. Okay? That is a forever well. Till the wells run dry.
Wow. Let me ask you a last question I've got. You know, this House Bill 1507 is still banging around. I understand the city council in Lancaster City voted to not endorse or voted against it?
Voted to ask the General Assembly to refuse to adopt 1507. You know what 1507 is. That's that paycheck deception bill.
Correct.
Where they're going to suggest that as a matter of law, it would be illegal for working people to designate what happens to their paychecks after they've earned them.
I'm actually in favor of paycheck protection. I look at these stories of all the McDonald's employees who are getting wages stolen from them, getting hours stolen from them. I hope someone would protect their paychecks.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, the best story about paycheck protection was that story from a couple of years ago when we found the guest workers employed by or on behalf of, technically not by, Hershey in that packaging plant. And when they staged a walkout, we learned that they were having several hundred dollars deducted from their very meager paychecks to live in an apartment that should have rented for $400 or $500 a month altogether was costing each of four kids $400 a month.
Yeah, I mean, the one I went to,
and it was being extracted right from their paycheck before they saw it.
Yeah, we went to they are actually in a hotel, in a small hotel, four people in a two-bed hotel room.
Yeah. Yeah, and those paychecks were not certainly not protected, nor was any other aspect of their experience in the United States.
So the Lancaster City Council, this is a good thing. We should be thanking them. We should be calling them, saying,
definitely thanking them, definitely calling them, and definitely recognizing that this is particularly significant because it's Lancaster City. In Lancaster County, we have the headquarters of the Associated Builders and Contractors, that viciously anti-union contractor association. In Lancaster County, the county commissioners voted last year to adopt a resolution to prohibit the utilization of project labor agreements, even though there has never been even one project labor agreement in the history of Lancaster County. So the Lancaster City Council stepping up and recognizing how outrageous this paycheck deception legislation is a very significant move, and we do thank them indeed. And our listeners should write or call to the members of the Lancaster City Council and thank them for stepping up to the plate on such an important and basic issue.
Outstanding. Erwin, always great talking with you. Appreciate you taking time for us.
Good to be here. Thanks. Bye.
All righty. Our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
With rock and roll.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Tales of American Political History with Clinton Porter Hackman.
We've been talking about military photographer Bill Jones and his end of war mission to photograph Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The officers accompanying him were energized by curiosity and sensed the importance of the mission. But the 20-year-old photographer said he didn't think about the significance of what he was doing at the time. He was just doing his job. Yet he did have some feel for the historical importance of what was going on just from being around the older officers. Enough so that he did something significantly different in his photo development procedures. He would move negatives through trays of fluids, a shortstop bath, removal of unexposed silver, and then add military data and information that included secret classification. But this time, he made himself a pre-official print to keep with no secret classification, then printed the official versions. Join us again for the classified photos. This is Clinton Porter Hackney at cphackney.com.
Tales of American Political History.
Now you've done it. You've made Ben sad. Ben Bernanke, I mean, the former head of the Federal Reserve who bulldozed more than $3 trillion into Wall Street vaults to bail out the big banks whose greed, fraud, and incompetence crashed our economy. Speaking to about 1,000 of those former bankers at a recent conference held in the Emirates Palace in Abu Dhabi, Bernanke wailed that he was really saddened by the failure of us simple commoners to grasp what that bailout was all about. It was about, quote, the average person, he explained to his audience of super-rich bankers, who had to snicker as he said that, since they're the ones who actually got the government's money. There was hardly a dry seat in the hall, as Ben lamented that, quote, the guy on Main Street just didn't get it, that by rescuing Wall Street, we're protecting you. So see, you and I need to be much more appreciative of the help we got from him, because otherwise, well, he'll be sad. Of course, Bernanke can probably assuage his sadness with the money he got for delivering this little personal insight into the psychic pain of a Federal Reserve chairman. Hosted by the National Bank of Abu Dhabi and sponsored by such Wall Street powers as Citigroup, which, by the way, grabbed $100 billion in just the first phase of the bailout, Bernanke was paid $250,000 for a 40-minute chat. Allow me to do the math for you. His fee works out to $6,250 per minute of speechifying. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow, how can the guy on Main Street even begin to comprehend that? But we can comprehend something that Ben cannot. If he had actually given a damn about us, he simply could have forced every one of the bailed-out bankers to put their government money into job-creating investments on our Main Streets. Instead, he let the bankers take our tax dollars with no strings attached. No wonder they paid him $250,000 for a speech.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy, The Rick Smith Show.
Buy it. And, you know, as one person emailed me, said, you know, if you play by the rules and you win the game, you know, that's one thing. If you follow the rules, just like all the rest of us. But the fact that Sheldon Adelson and the rest of these, and they go, but Rick, why are you picking on poor Sheldon? Why are you picking on the poor Koch brothers? Why are you picking on these handful of people? They're destroying the freaking country, man. And, you know, I look at this, and I look at this Hobby Lobby case, and I don't care what your views on contraception are. I think people who are anti-contraception have to in some way be very pro-abortion because, hello, one's going to bring you the other. The fact that you've got these very wealthy people who are going to inflict their views on the rest of us. And this Hobby Lobby case to me is huge because you've got these very wealthy people who, because they have an ideological bent, want to tell everybody else what they can and they cannot do. And it's insane to me. From the very beginning, if the folks who've been longtime listeners of the program know, from the very beginning of this whole, it's a war on religion, I said, it has nothing to do with religion. This is a worker issue. This is a freedom issue. This is a privacy issue. This is a privacy issue between me and my insurance company. Just because I work for a company that says we're going to, as part of your wage package, provide you health care. Again, and I've said this a million times, and I'll say it a million more until we pull our heads out of the sand. We should not have an employer-based health care system at all. Should not happen. Should have never happened. It was dumb. It was as dumb. It's still dumb. But I look at this company, Hobby Lobby. Oh, we should have the right. We should have the right to say who gets what. Who gets health care and what's in that health care? Me, as the overseer, as the king, as the oligarch, I should be able to dictate what my employees get, which is ludicrous, man. It's just dumb. But that's what we're doing with our political process. That's what we're doing through this whole setup. And what I find really interesting, and I want to take a quick break here, but what I find really interesting is Mother Jones put out a report on Tuesday on the magazine that Hobby Lobby holds more than $73 million in mutual funds with investments in companies that do what? Produce the emergency contraceptive pills, the intrauterine devices, and drugs commonly used in abortions. Huh. So if I got this right, just so I know, investing is one thing. imposing my will, another. Their defense was, and I'm waiting for the defense of, well, we just have so much money. How could we ever keep track of what we invest in? Just ludicrous. And hypocritical on so many levels. Quick break, back with your thoughts.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Salvatore Calalori. With Obamacare signups surpassing the administration's goal of 7 million signups, it's now clear that the enrollment was an unmitigated success. But Fox News has been working for months to undermine the ACA, and they have continued to downplay positive news about Obamacare now that the goal has been met. On The 5, Fox's Jesse Waters attempted to undermine positive news about Obamacare.
I actually think the White House is straight up lying about these numbers. They're saying 7 million people signed up on the website that was broken for the last 9 months.
Charles Krauthammer did the same on Fox News' special report.
Look, this is a phony number. It's meaningless because, A, we don't know how many of them have paid.
But these talking points are all too predictable. On CNN's reliable sources, guest Elise Vibeck commented,
"It's interesting, Fox News in particular constantly asks at any point when Obamacare news is reported, well, how many people have paid? And certainly we note that in all of our articles, how many people have paid, you know, 80, 90%.
For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
the proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
You know, I still got this on my brain, and what's really shocking to me is the lack of outrage that the lack of outrage from folks that I spoke with today. You know, it's just kind of it's over, the game's over, stick a fork in it, that there's nothing we can do, the Tina mentality, there's no alternative, there's nothing we can do, Rick, just play along, you gotta play along if you want to get along. Is that where we're going? Because I got to be honest, I don't know that I'm on board with that. I don't know that I want in 20, 30, 40 years, if I'm still alive, to have my kids turn around and go, Dad, what the? How? Why? You did what? And I think we've got to start thinking in those terms. You know, I think back to my grandfather, who was very anti the very well-to-do. Only because he understood that they were looking out for themselves. This idea of a benevolent dictator was not something that could be tolerated in that generation. This idea of the patriarchal son who will give them whatever they want, they will take care of us, was not something that my grandparents' generation bought into. And I don't think it's an American idea. This idea that we've been force-fed this, right? Take care of yourself. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. This idea that if we give to the billionaires that they'll do everything, it's ridiculous. And you hear it in the rhetoric. If we give them tax cuts, they'll create jobs. And we couldn't do it ourselves. And I ask the question, what happens when the Koch brothers, what happens when the captains of industry, what happens when the titans of our industries, of our economy, then take over and get complete control? What happens? And I look at, Paul Krugman wrote an article a couple of days ago that caught my attention. He pointed out that in 1979, and I've seen this statistic before, in 1979, the top 1% held about 17% of the nation's business income. About 17%. So you've got a pretty well-to-do 1%. 2007 comes around. That 17% skyrockets all the way up to 43%, top 1%. Now, I can throw out all the facts and all the figures and all of the economic data and all of that stuff because I pay attention to that stuff. And I've got some great listeners who say, hey, Rick, did you see this? And you can always send me stuff, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do read it all, and I do try and respond to everything. But I pay attention to this stuff. But even beyond all that, the reality, we are living in very different societies, in very different worlds. We have very different ideas of right and wrong. And I look at there was a hearing. And again, you know, there was a hearing on General Motors and why they didn't fix a switch problem back in 2005 that they knew about. And there were a bunch of emails, and on Tuesday there were a bunch of documents released by the House Committee on Energy and Commerce that really pointed out, well, yeah, GM failed to recall 2.6 million cars for more than a decade because of this switch that evidently, when the switch went off, it would shut the engine off, it would disable the airbags, cut the power steering, it cut the power brakes, it just, everything stopped. And they're saying that 13 people died because of it. And as the one congressperson from Colorado, or congresswoman from Colorado, pointed out, to her, and you know, nobody's seen what she sees, in order to fix the problem that they had with this switch would have cost, according to her, 57 cents. So 13 people are dead on something that could have been fixed and they knew was a problem, you know, all the way back then, for 57 cents. Now, according to the Reuters report, Reuters got a bunch of emails that puts that cost at about 90 cents. even still, at 90 cents, you're talking about 13 lives, 90 cents. And I know, Rick, that's an awful lot of cars. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's millions of dollars. And it would have been a retooling cost of a couple hundred thousand, just way too much. And I look at this and I go, you know, the problem is capitalism. This race to the bottom, this idea that we're going to outcompete the other guy and we're going to cut corners where we can, and the lack of regulatory oversight. And what's interesting, and the reason I bring this up, because I think it's so important, what's interesting is that once the Republican flax bought by the business class, and even Democratic flax, look, I mean, when the money starts flowing, all their little piggy noses are in the same trough. They've got to get the cash from somewhere, so when they put it out like slop, you know, they're coming to it. What will happen is you will see more of these very pro-business, anti-regulation, anti-consumer, anti-worker type pieces of legislation pop up. And these things won't even be reported on anymore. These 13 people, 13 people step off a curb and get run over by a skateboarder. That's nothing. Statistically, it's not a big deal. It's all about cutting costs. And what gets me is, understand what the business community has always wanted. The holy grail here in the United States. Kill those trial lawyers. Go after that tort reform. So that if you are one of those 13 people, because stop and think about this, GM made a conscious decision that it was cheaper to not spend 57 cents per car, or even 90 cents per car, to make sure that people don't die. It was in their interest to go, you know what, save 57 to 90 cents, kill people. How are the lawsuits going to work out? Let them die. That's reality, folks. And when the corporate interests and the oligarchs get their way, that's what they crush. So be very weary of, let's get tort reform. Be very weary of, we're going to put those frivolous lawsuits in their place. Be very weary of that. Because this GM case to me, wow. Now, of course, the media had to report, you know, the reason that they cut corners is because they had those high legacy labor costs. Yeah, that's what it was. It was the workers' fault. It wasn't the CEO who was paid by the bonus. It wasn't the engineers who got a big fat bonus at the end of the year. No, it's the workers' fault. Blame them. Sad stuff. Quick break, back with hour two. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. A monster out to maul federal workers. That's how American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. describes the latest budget proposal from Republican Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan. Cox called the budget an insatiable monster, not content with the $138 billion it's already extracted from federal workers through pay freezes and other cuts. Cox calls Ryan's new budget morally repulsive and intellectually dishonest. Ryan's budget would require more money from federal worker take-home pay to be diverted to their pensions, amounting to a 6% cut in take-home pay. It would also take money out of the federal retirement system and put it into a 401k-style plan. There are other unspecified cuts to federal employee pay and benefits as well. The Ryan budget would cut $5.1 trillion from the federal budget over 10 years. Two women who say they were McDonald's managers for years are saying that they participated in wage theft from McDonald's workers, and it was systematic. In a video posted on YouTube, Kwanzaa Brooks said in part,
I think the worst thing that I was ever asked to do
would be to really adjust a person's time. That is the worst, because they did the work. They were there. And they deserve to get paid for what they did. It's a job. It's not right. It's not fair.
Lakia Williams says she was a McDonald's manager for years as well, and she describes how managers stole wages from workers.
On several occasions had employees come and work either before their shift or either stay after their shift. I've had employees literally clock out to work because they were either going into overtime or labor was getting extremely high, and we had to balance it.
A national poll of fast food workers shows 89% of them report having wages illegally taken from them. The Hart Research poll surveyed 1,008 fast food workers in 10 cities. The China Labor Bulletin says Walmart workers in Changde are standing firm on their demand for a doubling of compensation offered by Walmart as the store there closes. Walmart has made a lesser offer, and it's trying to get workers to accept that. But the Changde Walmart trade union is urging the workers to stand firm and not be tempted by unripe fruit. The Chinese Walmart workers demanded collective bargaining with the Chinese Walmart store after management announced March 4th that the store was closing. When the closing was announced, the workers were told to accept layoffs or move to another store, but they organized to demand compensation for the closing.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Well, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. I'm really interested in the thoughts on this, though, because... And you can always email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. And I'm really stumped by it. I'm really stumped by our willingness, and not just on the radical right, but also everywhere else where the outrage just does not seem to be there. I get the Fox News listener. I get the Fox News viewer who has been spoon-fed this billionaire good, government bad. I get it. I'm struggling with the idea that that we're willing to put up with it. Let's go to the phones. Let's see who's on line one. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Did you ever get my tweet?
I did, yes.
I was going to say, I hope he doesn't tweet me back. I mean, you might want to explain to the listeners that I actually sent you a tweet that said, you're going to let me say something?
Go ahead, say something.
That's what all intentions of doing. First of all, from what is it, Attorney Aronson said?
Yes.
I'm starting to think moving to Europe may not be such a bad idea.
No, absolutely not. Under no circumstances. I don't advocate under any sense, any way possible that we turn our back and run. We stand, we fight, we push back, we get out in the streets, we organize, and look, start talking about a constitutional amendment to pull money out. Start talking about a constitutional amendment that says...
There already is when I'll post it on the Facebook page. But another thing is this, and this is something that I got to take credit. I think this is something that the workers in Wisconsin, this is something that the Moral Monday movement, the kind of the quid pro quo concept that the, you know, people like Adelson and that, you know, they want something in return.
Of course they do. They want more money. They want power.
I thought I was going to be a little more coherent than I was last time.
Hit
but
me.
What I'm saying, what I mean is, you know, what we need to do, well, you know, people like you and Bill Moyers, and yes, I do consider you and Bill Moyers basically along the same lines. But what we need to do is, you know, first of all, we need to make this an issue in 2014. This needs to be something that labor, that community organizations can rally around. Secondly, like your previous guest said, you know, basically it's another Bill Moyers-ism, is that the only thing that can defeat organized money is organized people.
Yep. We've out-procreated them.
The problem is that what we have to remember is that there are a lot of people on our side that, you know, they accept what they hear from the media outlets of the Kochs, of the Adelsons.
I agree.
But the other thing, as I said, is that somebody, be it somebody like Mother Jones, be it something independent, needs to follow the money trail. You know, basically say, okay, you know, like you said, you know, Adelson might be saying, okay, I buy this, you know, I pay off, I elect candidates that are going to make it easier to open casinos. Range Resources, you know, is going to continue to want to attack environmental regulations. Somebody needs to make it so that that money trail is followed, because I think people are fed up with, contrary to what the Supreme Court thinks, contrary to what the people that rely on those, on the media outlets of the Kochs, et cetera, think, people are getting tired of seeing a government of, by, and for corporations. Make a long story short, like you said, I ain't leaving yet. I mean, I'll give it another 10. A couple years ago, after the Bush v. Gore Supreme Court decision, I gave it 10 years. And I figured that in 10 years, you know, I'm in 10 years. Well, it seems that the decade-long deadline just keeps moving forward.
Yeah.
So now we're going to be up to about 2024, you know, there's a good chance where, as much as I hate to say it, and I know I've said this before, I could actually see, if we don't turn this around by 2024, that we will find ourselves in some sort of uprising.
And that may be what has to happen. And as I've been saying, things get to a point where it's gone so far that visceral reactions from everyday people have to turn against it. And this idea that they're going to spend unlimited amounts of money brainwashing us, at some point, I think we have to turn against it. At some point, you have to pull your head up off the treadmill and go, wait, I'm really getting screwed here.
And as I said, I think we've seen that. We've seen that with the Moral Monday movement. We've seen that with the workers of Wisconsin. We saw that with Occupy.
Right.
All right. Well, I've said my piece. As I said, I'm hoping I was a little more coherent than I was last time.
You're a good dude. I appreciate the call, man, and you were spot on.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Right,
thanks so much. No, but here's the thing. And going back to this premise, this idea that folks have to, on a visceral level, turn away and push back on this. The whole reason that campaign finance rules came into place, really, you can go back to Nixon's 1972 campaign, where this insurance magnate, this very wealthy guy, his name was W. Clement Stone, a very wealthy guy, gave the campaign $2 million, which in today's dollars, they claim for inflation, about $11 million. Not something that happened an awful lot, but, you know, bang, there it was. And that's what prompted this push towards real transparency. That's what prompted this push towards, you know, hey, where's the money? Who's it coming from? And there are those who say, well, you know, they should have the right to say whatever they want. Yeah, we should have the right to know who's paying for it. And all we keep seeing are these front groups that keep propping up Americans who love puppies and Americans who are bright and happy, and, you know, all of this, these euphemistic names, these feel good names. And how could you possibly be against puppies? Funded by really ugly people with very ugly agendas. I mean, I get pitched on this program quite often from these right-wing groups until they find out, oh, we don't want to do that. Because when I say to them, look, I'm going to go after you because I don't agree with you. Well, thanks. Nice talking to you. And this is where the whole Move to Amend movement, I think, is so vitally important. And I'm hoping, I got to be honest, I'm hoping maybe when we look back in a year, 5, 10, maybe we look back to this moment, to today, where we were going, wow, we're in despair because it looks like the moneyed interests have taken over. It looks like the very well-to-do have lined their pockets and they're doing just fine. Thank you very much. Where we look back and we go, that was the turning point. That's what made people lift their heads. That's what got us with the took the blinders off and said, money in politics is a bad idea. And we start moving towards limiting the amount of contributions, limiting the amount of money a candidate can have. Look, it shouldn't be about who can raise the most money from the very wealthy. It should not be. It should be about ideas. It should be about vision. It should be about leadership. Who can run the best widget? And that's where I've always said, look, every candidate, if you get the proper number of signatures, the proper number of small, very small donations, and bring more people in, that's where we should be going. I mean, if you look at the data from the Center for Responsive Politics, this 1.3 million people, stop and think about this for a second, only 1.3 million people donated more than $200 to a federal candidate, a party committee, or a PAC last during that cycle, during the 2012 cycle. Only 1.3 million people. And if you look at it, only 600 people hit that maximum that this decision by the Supreme Court has lifted. So we've changed the entire law of the nation for these 600 people, so that their voice can be louder than yours. And that's where I have a problem. Look, I'm all in favor of equal rights. The problem is on this plane, we're giving those who we've given wild amounts of tax cuts to, who we've given huge subsidies to, we're giving them a huge, enormous, massive step forward that the rest of us, that you and I, do not enjoy. You know, this, I think back to a friend of mine who was a congressman back, you know, back before the Tea Party, Tea Party guy he lost to in 2010. His name was Phil Hare. Real good guy. A great guy. Good working person, working class hero. A guy who started off on the shop floor cutting fabric by hand in a textile mill in Chicago. A guy who worked every day of his life. He eventually became a congressman. And he told me that, look, you know, no one's ever bought my vote. But when I've got to go begging people for money, doesn't matter who it is, because you're begging everybody, because the day you get elected, especially in the House, and this is why I think you're seeing so many representatives going, I'm giving this up. I can't keep up with the phone calls. I can't keep up with the begging. Because look around. The requests, the demands of the wealth class, the demands of the corporate class, they're getting crazier. They're getting further out on the extremes. Deregulate everything. Shut OSHA out of regulating businesses. Allow me to steal from my workers. I mean, the requests and the demands from the business community, really, too much power. We've given them too much. We've given in to business-friendly too much. And I'm hoping, honestly, I'm hoping at some point we begin to push back. And like I said, I hope this is it. I hope this is that decision that makes us go, you know, it's about time. It's about time we end this. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
America for the better.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Salvatore Calalori. With Obamacare signups surpassing the administration's goal of 7 million signups, it's now clear that the enrollment was an unmitigated success. But Fox News has been working for months to undermine the ACA, and they have continued to downplay positive news about Obamacare now that the goal has been met. On The 5, Fox's Jesse Waters attempted to undermine positive news about Obamacare.
I actually think the White House is straight up lying about these numbers. They're saying 7 million people signed up on the website that was broken for the last 9 months.
Charles Krauthammer did the same on Fox News' special report.
Look, this is a phony number. It's meaningless because, A, we don't know how many of them are paid.
But these talking points are all too predictable. On CNN's Reliable Sources, guest Elise Vibeck commented,
"It's interesting, Fox News in particular constantly asks at any point when Obamacare News is reported, well, how many people have paid? And certainly we note that in all of our articles, how many people have paid, you know, 80, 90%.
For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Now you've done it. You've made Ben sad. Ben Bernanke, I mean. The former head of the Federal Reserve, who bulldozed more than $3 trillion into Wall Street vaults to bail out the big banks whose greed, fraud, and incompetence crashed our economy. Speaking to about 1,000 of those former bankers at a recent conference held in the Emirates Palace in Abu Dhabi, Bernanke wailed that he was really saddened by the failure of us simple commoners to grasp what that bailout was all about. It was about, quote, the average person, he explained to his audience of super-rich bankers, who had to snicker as he said that, since they're the ones who actually got the government's money. There was hardly a dry seat in the hall, as Ben lamented that, quote, the guy on Main Street just didn't get it, that by rescuing Wall Street, we're protecting you. So see, you and I need to be much more appreciative of the help we got from him, because otherwise, well, he'll be sad. Of course, Bernanke can probably assuage his sadness with the money he got for delivering this little personal insight into the psychic pain of a Federal Reserve chairman. Hosted by the National Bank of Abu Dhabi and sponsored by such Wall Street powers as Citigroup, which, by the way, grabbed $100 billion in just the first phase of the bailout, Bernanke was paid $250,000 for a 40-minute chat. Allow me to do the math for you. His fee works out to $6,250 per minute of speechifying. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow, how can the guy on Main Street even begin to comprehend that? But we can comprehend something that Ben cannot. If he had actually given a damn about us, he simply could have forced every one of the bailed-out bankers to put their government money into job-creating investments on our Main Streets. Instead, he let the bankers take our tax dollars with no strings attached. No wonder they paid him $250,000 for a speech.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
All because the gays are getting married. That is why people die and children go unfed. When I'm sad,
blame it all. They're evil. That's right. They're bad, bad, bad human, bad people. And everything that happens in our society is because of the gays. It's their fault. The earthquake in Chile, it's their fault. Isn't that what we're told? And I got to be honest. I had this moment over the weekend to just kind of stop me in my tracks, because I took the kids to go see the movie Frozen, which, you know, the big to-do, doing the good dad thing. Let's go see Frozen. I guess it was all right. My kids loved it. You know, it's like any of the Disney movies. It is what it is. But I had to listen to a dissertation of the woman behind me, who was appalled, absolutely appalled, that there was a gay scene in the movie Frozen. And I'm going, really? There's a gay scene? Did I miss it? And I had to ask, you know, where's the gay scene? Did I miss the gay scene in the movie? And there's a scene in where the main characters goes into this, you know, this little kind of like inn,
And, you know, the big burly guy behind the counter, you know, roughs up the boyfriend or whatever, the guy who took her in. And really quick, you know, as the guy behind the innkeeper behind the counter says, you know, and then you can come and you can have a room and you can go into the sauna where my family is. And it real quick, it shoots a picture of the people whose faces are in the sauna. And they're all male faces, evidently. I missed it. It was that quick that I missed it. But she was well versed in that there was going to be those people in the movie, and that she was upset and angry. And I'm like, well, why did you come here? Why would you do that? Why would you? I guess just to complain. I can't come up with any other rational reason other than it's just something to complain about and make a scene about. Which is why I'm really kind of freaked out about the movement that's going on in this country. Under the guise of religious liberty, there are states, like Arizona had thought about it and actually passed it until the governor vetoed it. And in Mississippi, just today I saw the report that Mississippi legislature passed legislation that would, again, this whole idea of religious liberty, to be able to deny people rights, right to come in and buy things from your store, the right to come into a restaurant or rent a hotel room, basically the right to discriminate. And, you know, I look at this and you go, really? And you gotta love the name of them, Religious Freedom Restoration Acts. You know, it's really just freaky to me. And as someone who, you know, yeah, I know a number of small business owners. You go, really, would you turn people away? And I go, you know, I thought, you know, business was about making money, the capitalist. No, evidently, first is this whole idea of being able to discriminate against others. The others. It's always the others' fault. You know, I've told a couple of people, you know, I took my daughter to the women's NCAA basketball tournament, the first round, which we had an absolute ball at. And I think as a father-daughter, I think we're going to do that every year from now on. Until, you know, she gets old and says, get away from me, Dad, you're bothering me. But because we had such a good weekend. But to be honest, there were a lot of same-sex couples there, tons of them. And you go, well, how do you know they were same-sex couples, Rick? I go, well, you know, like the two women in front of us, you know, who are obviously women in their late 40s, early 50s, you know, very gray hair, you know, very, very well-cropped, you know, women who every time Notre Dame would score, they kissed each other. And, you know, someone said to me, well, didn't that make you uncomfortable? I'm like, no. What would have made me uncomfortable if one would have taken out a club and bludgeoned the other one? That would have made me uncomfortable. And I wouldn't have wanted my daughter to see that because, you know, I've seen people bludgeoned. It's not pretty. Didn't bother me that my daughter would see two people being affectionate to each other. Doesn't bother me at all. And what I did find interesting is that Notre Dame, because every time Notre Dame would score, they would kiss each other. Like, hooray, you know, our team. And I'm going, really, Notre Dame? But I find just troubling that there are these extremists. And it's like anything. Whenever you put the extremists into positions of power, they always go to the vast extreme. And what I found interesting about going to the NCAA game, where the Notre Dame people, because it was basically a home game for Notre Dame, in the final round they were playing Arizona State in Toledo, Ohio, and South Bend is only a couple miles away, you know, maybe an hour, hour and a half away from Toledo. So it was basically a home game. You know, three quarters of the people in the arena were from Notre Dame. And, you know, look, they weren't all same-sex couples, but what was odd to me, you know, if I'm to buy what I'm told that the religious community shuns these people, that I'm only using the people that I saw in my section, of which there were several couples who were hand-in-hand, arm-in-arm, embracing each other in affectionate ways, which, great, do what you got to do. I'm happy for you. I'm happy that you're happy. But there were a lot of heterosexual couples there who didn't have a problem with it. And you didn't hear any snide, snarky remarks like, oh, I didn't have to know I was going to have to sit through a gay scene. Like I had to at the theater. It's just, it's ridiculous. And I'm hoping at some point that we get by it. We get past it. My kids, you know, my daughter didn't even actually notice, to be honest with you. Didn't even cross her radar. And maybe I look at her generation with hope that all of the idiocy that I grew up with, all of the hatred that's being pushed by people who call themselves pious, religious people, I'm hoping, and there's really hope for me for the future, that their generation will be the one that goes, I don't care about any of that stuff. I care about how you treat me. I care about how things, how we interact positively or negatively, not based on who or what you are, but who you are. And it just seems interesting to me that this is, in this day, something that's still out there. And the idea of business people, I mean, if you don't want to be in business, you should probably get out of it. If you don't want to be serving people that may be a little different, maybe you should get out of the business. Because it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me that you would turn paying customers away. And you go, but Rick, that's their right. No, not in an open democratic society. I'm sorry. You don't have the right to do that to people. You just don't. And it just is what it is. This idea that, because think about this. I was reading a story from, I think it was Arizona, where some restaurant had thought that these people were a same-sex couple and had done some really just nasty stuff to their food, drawn like swastikas on it and stuff like that. And I remember going, well, how do you know that they're same-sex? How do you know? Did they have a tattoo on? And I'm hoping at some point we just go, you know what? I don't really care. We got more important things to deal with. And it just seems that it's all in the name of religion. Doesn't that seem weird to you? Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Our government spending over $10.6 million of your taxes on climate research.
On combating global warming on the hunch. It's man-made.
A theory that proved to be grounded in little more than hysteria.
This is surprising. You know, I haven't heard on the other channels that some of the glaciers are getting bigger, but that's why people watch Fox. No.
Yep, it's our special April Fox Day edition of the Green News Report.
Yep, all of that fox foolery and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Bye for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and foxy comment.
Tide goes in, tide goes out. Never miscommunication.
Ah, Fox News and science, perfect together. This is your Green News Report.
That's why they watch Fox.
Okay, Desi Doyen, before we get to the Fox foolery, in a related item, this fossil fuel-funded group calling itself the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change, or NIPCC, released a report this week at the same time the UN did, trying to undermine that report. Among the things these ExxonMobil-funded folks say, carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. There is little or no risk of increasing food insecurity due to global warming. A modest warming of the planet will result in a net reduction of human mortality from temperature-related events, and that rising CO2 is actually good, not bad, for the planet.
Oh, so it'll all be great and we have nothing to worry about.
Yes, it's all good. Why don't you stop your whining? By the way, this is the same group that also has said for years that secondhand smoke is not bad for you. So that's the kind of science that we're working with there. But how about the kind of science they're working with on Fox News?
Yep, that's the question today. We thought, what better way to start the month of April than to celebrate the fools at Fox News, especially the Fox News Brain Trust when it comes to the planet's most pressing existential concern, global warming and climate change. So today, a quick look back at just a few of our favorite Fox moments from the fossil-fueled fools at Fox News. On March 31st, as you heard, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released its latest report on the coming devastating impacts of climate change, warning that it will get worse and we need to cut our greenhouse gas emissions or push the climate beyond our ability to adapt as a species. But you won't hear that on the number one cable news outlet, Fox News, with their tsunami of disinformation.
There's no science to global warming.
Wait,
when are the rest of you liberals going to come around and say, you know what, there is no science and we need more time with the IPCC? IPCC, maybe wrong.
There is no science, just thousands and thousands and thousands of pages and studies, not only as released in the latest IPCC report, but that report itself is a survey of thousands of other scientific reports, pretty much all finding the same thing.
And really, what's the point of doing more science when Fox News isn't going to accept that science either? Here's how they describe the IPCC report.
They just take a survey of their friends and they say, here's what we believe, and now it must be true, and they demonize against it. I think the details are very threatening to them. That's why they don't want to look into this more and do more science. Right.
They just take a survey of their friends? Really?
That's Fox News' idea of how science works.
That's what they tell themselves in any case, and of course that's what they tell their millions of viewers.
And of course scientists have warned for decades that climate change will bring more frequent and intense extreme weather events, including snow in winter. But for the fools at Fox News, snow means global warming is a hoax.
It's the most severe winter storm in years, which would seem to contradict Al Gore's hysterical global warming theories.
Now, I sort of feel bad for Al Gore.
63% of the country is now covered in snow, and it's breaking Al Gore's heart.
I wonder where Al Gore is this morning. That global warming is really taking its toll.
And they offer terrible science. That's not actually science, but stuff that sounds like science.
First of all, CO2 cannot cause global warming. It literally cannot cause global warming.
Actual physicists disagree. So thanks, Joe Bastardi.
So you're going to go with the physicist instead of the TV weather guy that they put on to Fox News?
Oh, yeah. Then there's this classic explaining why solar power is more popular in Germany than in the U.S.
Oh, I love this one. A classic.
What was Germany doing correct? Are they just a smaller country and made it more
They're a smaller country, and they've got lots of sun.
Right.
They've got a lot more sun than we do.
Totally, completely, entirely wrong. Just like the rest of Fox News' reportage on climate change, on global warming, and yes, on science.
And this is from a major cable news outlet.
This is the majorest cable news outlet, to be frank. No wonder so many of their viewers are so disinformed. And by the way, I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that their second major shareholder is actually a Saudi oil prince. They probably don't mention that to their viewers either, eh?
Probably not.
For much more Fox foolery and actual science this week, please check out our webpage at greennews.bradblog.com. We'll return to actual news later this week. Until then, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your April Fox Day Green News Report.
Looks to me like we're looking at global cooling. Forget this global warming.
What does the Fox say? What the Fox say?
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. One of the things that I really, I prefer in my life, and I know a lot of folks, you know, love the big box retailers, love the chain restaurants. We just,
Actually, I think it's we love what's force-fed to us. I like local. And on this program, we've talked about local production, local consumption. And anytime you see be it a manufacturer or a small business or a restaurant or a brewery or anything local, you go, hey, you know, maybe we should find out what they're doing right and how we should help support them. And I understand that the folks at the Market Cross Pub here in Carlisle, 1113 North Hanover Street, they are celebrating their 20th anniversary. Big celebration coming up. Also going to have a charitable golf outing. And here to talk a little bit about the anniversary, the big 20th anniversary. 20 years, that is fantastic. And the charitable golf outing, I've asked Ashley Corby. She's one of the owners of the Market Cross Pub. Ashley, thanks for taking time for us.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations. 20 years, quite a milestone.
I know. We are extremely excited to be celebrating 20 years in Carlisle. We'll be celebrating all month long in April. So we've got all kinds of events scheduled. We just kick-started on April 1st, and we've got tons of things planned, from Pub Olympics to a birthday bash and beer and ice cream flight night and everything in between.
Yeah, beer and ice cream. That's something I think everything goes well with ice cream or beer.
Yes, I agree. So we thought we'll put them together for an evening of beer and ice cream. We're bringing Deschutes Brewery from Oregon into Pennsylvania this month. So we thought we would take their beer and put it into ice cream and then pair it along with the beer as well. So it should be good.
Quite a concoction. If you want to know more about the Market Cross Pub, marketcrosspub.com, the website, we've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Ashley's name. You know, one of the things that, you know, I talk about here on the program is local. I like local ownership because I believe when you have people who are part of the community, the fabric of the community, who are invested in the community, I think that's a good thing. I'm not a huge fan of these huge chains. So, you know, I look at the work that you're doing, I'm going, you know, given the pressures, how have you kept this up for 20 years?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that you take notice to it. Yes, my family has been working very hard for 20 years, and it's really a great staff that we've built, you know, over the past 20 years, but such a wonderful customer base. We have the best customers, you know, from this area, and people who have, you know, lived here and moved away and come back to visit us. But we're just really grateful to have such wonderful people in our lives. So that has definitely helped make the 20 years a lot of fun.
And in the process of hiring local people, what they make stays in the community, obviously, and the charitable work that you guys do, from what I understand, a fairly considerable amount of charitable work.
We do, yes. We feel that it's very important to give back to the community and to the people that have supported us for so long. We do different events throughout the year. We just actually did a dine and donate that raised $400 for the Hilltop Academy service dogs. And looking ahead, we have our 20th annual golf outing on May 9th. It will be at Mayapple Golf Course. And it's at 1 o'clock, and you can get more information on our website. But we're really happy this year to be able to give it back to one of our regular customers who is really going through a hard time battling breast cancer. So in honor of her and the Breast Cancer Coalition, funds will be going directly to her family and to bring awareness for the cause. So hopefully people can come out for a great cause and have fun too. Obviously there will be a lot of beer and a lot of fun with the golf outing, as well as something that can help out a local family.
Yeah, you know, you brought up service dogs, and there's so many groups that we've talked to over the years that do work. And this is one of those things that for years I've thought has been a fantastic program, be it Tabs for Labs or Pets for Vets or any of the number of other groups that we've worked with. To get people, you know, whether they need service dogs because they're disabled physically, or, you know, some of our veterans and our heroes who need companionship with one of these trained dogs. Just, I think it's fantastic. It's a fantastic cause.
Yes, this specific cause helps children who have you know, different various problems, so that these dogs really help them. And it was nice for the event. Some of the kids drew pictures and wrote messages of how the dogs helped them. And it really hit home and showed people, you know, how important it really is. And we were really happy to be able to help them.
And you can help as well. MarketCrossPub.com, the website, the address 113 North Hanover Street there in Carlisle. You've been at the same place 20 years, right?
Yes, we have. We started out just the one side and then expanded over. So now, you know, to what we have now, and we've got the brewery in the back as well. So it's really a nice place in historic Carlisle, and there's lots to do in downtown Carlisle. So you can start at Market Cross and, you know, head around to the different retail shops.
And the whole idea is to bring people back into the cities. You know, as I've been saying here on the program, we've gotten so used to these big box retailers where everything's in this one big store, and we get all this cheap plastic garbage from places like China and Vietnam and all over, where we use third world labor and poor conditions and all of that. To me, it's always nice that there are things locally that people can support locally.
Yes, I completely agree. And like I said, downtown Carlisle really has a lot to offer, you know, from different restaurants and different retail shops. And I always say, you know, start in Carlisle if you're from the area. You know, if you can't find what you're looking for, then go elsewhere. But always, you know, start in your downtown and see what that has to offer, whether it's for, you know, gifts or things for yourself. And you'll be surprised what you can find. And, of course, at Market Cross, we can give you at least a good time, a fresh pint of beer, and a good meal. So we can at least guarantee that.
And there you go. And lastly, the golf outing. What if you don't golf? What if you're not one of those people who I'm not walking through the park looking for a little ball?
Oh, that's quite all right. We take volunteers. Absolutely, you can come and help in that aspect. You can also come just for the dinner that day if you still want to be a part of the event. And lastly, you know, sponsorships. That's what really helps to make the event successful. And you can look on our website, marketcrosspub.com, for a sponsorship form. You can give money. You can also give prizes for the golfers. So there's multiple different ways to actually participate in that specific event if you'd like to be able to. You don't just have to golf. So you can still come and have fun, or you can sponsor the hole or different prizes, whichever you'd like.
So we're 2 days into the big celebration of 20 years. The beer and ice cream is coming. What else have you got planned?
Well, we have this Saturday we'll have our Pub Olympics. We do an annual Pub Olympics.
So does that mean everyone gets liquored up and they try and run from one place to another and you laugh at them?
We do laugh at them. Hopefully not too liquored up. We try to keep it responsible, but it should be humorous to watch. So if you want to stop in for lunch on Saturday, it should be fun to see everybody, you know, participating in all of the events. And then next Saturday, April 12th, is our big birthday bash. So we've got beer paired with food and live entertainment by a Seldom Said No band, and it's back in our brewery. So tickets are on sale now. It's $15 a ticket in advance and $25 a ticket day of the event. So that should be a lot of fun. And then the beer and ice cream flight is Wednesday, April 16th. So, Rick, I'll be looking for you to come out and try our beer and ice cream.
There you go, beer and ice cream. Who could possibly be against that? Yeah. So the brewery part, you guys brew your own beer, right?
We do, yes. The brewery is actually located in the rear of Market Cross Pub. And the brewery joined Market Cross Pub in 2002. We have a English-style brewing system that we brought over from England. It's a 10-barrel system, which is equivalent to roughly 300 gallons. So we're a very small brewery, but I love the beer personally, and a lot of people do. So if you haven't tried our beer, I definitely suggest that you come out and try it. And we have our Market Cross Brewery Night, where you can get a brewery tour and meet the brewmaster on April 17th. And we actually have something pretty cool this year. We are joining with Carlisle Events. They are celebrating their 40th anniversary. So we've decided to brew a beer in their honor. We have the Carshow Cream Ale, and it's coming out on Wednesday, April 23rd. So if you want to support us and Carlisle Events, you can come out and try our new beer.
Wow, that sounds like a full action-packed month. If you want more information, marketcrosspub.com. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Ashley Corby's name. It'll take you right there. Last question I've got. You brought up the you brought the still over from England there. The beer's not warm, is it?
Well, we do have that option. We do have beer on a beer engine, but not our normal drafts aren't warm.
Yeah,
we have brought them up to America's standards with cold, fresh beer.
There you go. And no one can be against that, Ashley. I appreciate you taking time for us. Congratulations on 20 years.
Thank you.
And best of luck in the next 20.
Thank you so much, Rick. We appreciate it, and I promise I'll buy you a pint when I see you in there.
Outstanding. Thanks so much, Ashley. Ashley Corby, one of the owners of the Market Cross Pub. Again, marketcrosspub.com, the website. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Ashley's name. It'll take you right there. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. From the talk.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13. Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep...
Tales of American Political History with Clinton Porter Hackman.
We've been talking about military photographer Bill Jones and his end-of-war mission to photograph Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The officers accompanying him were energized by curiosity and sensed the importance of the mission. But the 20-year-old photographer said he didn't think about the significance of what he was doing at the time. He was just doing his job. Yet he did have some feel for the historical importance of what was going on just from being around the older officers. Enough so that he did something significantly different in his photo development procedures. He would move negatives through trays of fluids, a shortstop bath, removal of unexposed silver, and then add military data and information that included secret classification. But this time, he made himself a pre-official print to keep with no secret classification, then printed the official versions. Join us again for the classified photos. This is Clinton Porter Hackney at cphackney.com.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
So now you see the light, hey, stand up for your rights. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So on Friday, as I said earlier in the program, Friday is the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King in Memphis, Tennessee, as he was in Memphis to stand up for the sanitation workers there who they simply wanted the dignity and respect of a decent wage, of semi-safe working conditions. Not even, they weren't even talking about safe working conditions, just semi. They shouldn't have to be inside the garbage truck putting the garbage in. I mean, think about that for a second. I mean, that's what just kind of the conditions under which you can allow people to have to toil. And this is what happens when you give this kind of control to the very few, when you give these very wealthy people this kind of control to set conditions. To me, that's huge. And on Friday, there's going to be a huge demonstration in numerous places around the country. But in Washington, D.C., they're going to have a number of folks come out to talk about, you know, how important that movement, for that fight for economic justice, that fight for a better tomorrow, how that fight then is still the fight we have today. This is nothing new. This is what's been going on for generations now. And for me, it's time that we wake up to the realities that what we've been force-fed, not quite the truth. So I look forward to that. I look forward to talking to some folks there. We were supposed to get someone tonight to talk about the event that's coming up and the pursuit of this thing called a Robin Hood tax. And it's something I've advocated for a number of years. It used to be called the Tobin tax, basically a transaction tax, a sales tax on selling stocks. So if you sell your stock, you pay I think the number I saw was, like 0.25%, something really, almost nothing. There is this House bill, 1579. It's called the Inclusive Prosperity Act, that has this Robin Hood tax in it, this sales tax on selling stock. And what they're saying, and what I believe is probably the right idea here, speculators have really driven the price of oil through the roof, and really Wall Street. I mean, there have been several reports here over the last couple of weeks of these big investors going, the game's rigged. The whole game's fixed. This idea that there's any freedom in this system is ludicrous. The game's rigged. It's over. The big moneyed interests, the big players, they've figured out how to game the system for themselves. And they're the ones who pocket all of the spoils. So the thought is, look, if you've got these supercomputers, because it's all done by computers on fractions of cents, and, just when you're trading millions and millions of shares, fractions of cents, that's real money. So what they're saying is they want to put a small transaction tax on each sale to maybe slow down some of the speculation, slow down some of these supercomputers, or raise a ton of money to fix the damage that Wall Street's doing. And I think this is an excellent opportunity to highlight the fact that Dr. King was fighting for social and economic justice. And what we have in this country right now is major economic injustices. You have the gap between those who have and those who have not at levels not seen since the Great Depression. And I know we like to think as Americans, we're so much better than that. The numbers don't lie, though. When you look at the distribution of wealth, it is heavily skewed toward the very top. When you see a statistic like the 1% in this country controlling 43% of business income in 2007, whereas in 1979 it was only 17%. No one in their sane, rational, right mind can look at that and go, oh yeah, that's good for democracy. Oh yeah, that's good. It's good for us. Especially when you have these insane free trade agreements that allow money to flee the country and go wherever. And then you have a tax code that rewards speculation, and a tax code that rewards accumulation of wealth, and a tax code that, well, we love to hear about the rewards of work. Well, I don't know that betting on Wall Street is really work. So in my view, a simple tax on that seems to be at least rational. Now, what are we told quite often? What are we told about how we create jobs in this country? We're told the Tom Corbetts, the Mitt Romneys, the Grover Norquists, the pro-corporate folks, the economic right, if you will. They say the same thing. It's lower taxes, deregulation, that's what creates tax breaks, and subsidies, that's what creates jobs, right? Isn't that what Corbett's been running around saying? That if we give them money, they'll come. Turns out, I've been saying that, and the numbers have been out there saying that we fell from 7th down to 48th. That's really not the case. According to the most recent press release put out by Frank Dermody, the Democratic House leader, evidently we've fallen to the 49th. There's only one state that has had worse job creation than we have since Tom Corbett took office, since January of 2011. Only one state has had worse job creation, and that's New Mexico. And what they threw out there in the study that was done, they looked and they said, look, here, this is U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics pointing this out. From January of 11 through February of 2014, the Corbett term, net job growth here in Pennsylvania, 1.78%. The average for the nation, more than 5%. In fact, we lag behind every neighboring state in employment growth, and 31 states grew jobs at rates more than double ours. 31 states, more than double what we've been able to do. Now, let's go back and let's think about this, because we were told the way that you create jobs is you give money to the big corporations, which Corbett has done massively. In fact, $2 billion is what Governor Corbett has handed out in big cardboard checks to these multi-state, multinational interests. You remember when he did he went to France, he went to England, I think he went to Chile, Argentina, I think he was all over the planet going, hey, we're going to bring some jobs back. But what he was really doing is he was taking big cardboard checks going, here's my kids' education. Because understand, this guy's cut $1 billion each of the 2 years and $700 million in the third year. So you're talking about $2.7 billion cut to public education. Do you think that could help with employment? Do you think that could help with the job picture? Oh, yes. 20,000 education professionals have lost their jobs because of this governor's redistribution of wealth away from teachers and education and to handouts for corporations. Where are my Tea Party friends now? Oh, but Rick, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. You're right, I am. I mean, there are so many things we could be doing to jumpstart our economy. One, get teachers back to work, get people in the classroom, and get those kids the education that they are constitutionally entitled to in our state. Expand the Medicaid. I mean, it's to me, it is mind-boggling how you don't go, that's a no-brainer. The federal government's going to give me billions of dollars to invest into my state's healthcare system, and there are no strings attached. After 3 years, I have to pick up 10% of the cost, and if I don't want to do it, I can opt out in 3 years? It just seems to me it'd be an absolute no-brainer. But that means, and get this right, you have to give it to them first, which means that you have to take it away from them. And that's what the Republicans are so afraid of, that people are going to go, hey, this Obama thing, this health care, I like it. Kind of like my grandmother does with Medicare. They go, oh, hey, I kind of like this. I can cover my children. I'm not going to be fearful of losing my house. If I get sick, I can't be denied because of a pre-existing condition. Wow, kind of like this stuff. Huh, interesting. That's what they're afraid of. You know that's the truth. So as all of this plays itself out, and it will, our governor has cost us billions of dollars, and the experiment has not worked. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
a monster out to maul federal workers. That's how American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. describes the latest budget proposal from Republican Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan. Cox called the budget an insatiable monster, not content with the $138 billion it's already extracted from federal workers through pay freezes and other cuts. Cox calls Ryan's new budget morally repulsive and intellectually dishonest. Ryan's budget would require more money from federal worker take-home pay to be diverted to their pensions, amounting to a 6% cut in take-home pay. It would also take money out of the federal retirement system and put it into a 401k-style plan. There are other unspecified cuts to federal employee pay and benefits as well. The Ryan budget would cut $5.1 trillion from the federal budget over 10 years. Two women who say they were McDonald's managers for years are saying that they participated in wage theft from McDonald's workers, and it was systematic. In a video posted on YouTube, Kwanzaa Brooks said in part,
I think the worst thing that I was ever asked to do would be to really adjust a person's time. That is the worst, because they did the work. They were there, and they deserve to get paid for what they did. It's a job. It's not right. It's not fair.
Lakia Williams says she was a McDonald's manager for years as well, and she describes how managers stole wages from workers.
On several occasions, had employees come and work either before their shift or either stay after their shift. I've had employees literally clock out to work because they were either going into overtime or labor was getting extremely high, and we had to balance it.
A national poll of fast food workers shows 89% of them report having wages illegally taken from them. The Hart Research poll surveyed 1,008 fast food workers in 10 cities. The China Labor Bulletin says Walmart workers in Changde are standing firm on their demand for a doubling of compensation offered by Walmart as the store there closes. Walmart has made a lesser offer, and it's trying to get workers to accept that. But the Changde Walmart trade union is urging the workers to stand firm and not be tempted by unripe fruit. The Chinese Walmart workers demanded collective bargaining with the Chinese Walmart store after management announced March 4th that the store was closing. When the closing was announced, the workers were told to accept layoffs or move to another store, but they organized to demand compensation for the closing.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear that the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day, because we bought the election, and it better go our way. And on election night, we'll sit back and glow. The billionaires don't want you to vote.
Don't vote.
If you're happy with George Bush in charge, if you want to keep us living long.
Don't bother. Don't vote. Don't vote at all. Don't worry about it. It's just not going to help you. Stop already. Stop with all the concern, all the caring, all the voting. Just don't worry about it. It's just not going to happen. The game's rigged. Don't worry about it. Don't bother voting anymore, right? Is that what we're told? And I go back to my high school government teacher, who was, you know, to be honest, probably the most clairvoyant guy that I knew as a young man, because he foretold most of the insanity that was to ensue. And was it that he was clairvoyant, or was it just that he was paying attention? You know, I go back, you know, 3 years ago, or you know, for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been saying, look around. You're seeing all of these moneyed interests really heavily investing in media, heavily investing in all of these front groups and these shill organizations, you know, all of these different groups with really very nice, sweet names. That how could you possibly be against? And you go, all of this money's going into this. How do you not see what's coming out of this? And, you know, 5 years ago, I was saying, look, pay attention. This stuff's important. The wealth class is, they're working on it, man. And what's good for them is not necessarily good for you and me. So 3 years ago, you know, in February when we were in Wisconsin, I was there and I was saying, look, folks, back in our listening areas, We're in Wisconsin for one reason, to tell you what's coming, to tell you that the insanity is on its way. And it is. We're in Ohio for the SB 5 fight. Not because we wanted to go to Ohio, but because, look, that's the fight. That's what was coming. And every place where we've had guests from, be it from Tennessee or Missouri or Indiana or Michigan or anywhere across this country, where we've talked to people and said, hey, what's going on in your neck of the woods? The reason I do it, the reason I think it's so vitally important that we know what's going on everywhere else, is because eventually it comes here. Eventually it comes home to roost. Eventually it makes its way here. And it is here now. All of the assaults on workers that we've seen across this country are right here. They're here now. And the organizing has got to happen. It's got to begin. It's got to continue. It's got to grow. And it's only going to be when parents, when mothers and fathers and people who look into their children's eyes and go, you know what? Your future is more important than those Koch brothers. Your future is more important than the profiteers who are destroying education. Your future of employment, opportunity, more important than a huge handout to a multi-state, multinational corporation connected to the governor. Much more important. And as I go through and as I look at this, the sad reality is, you know, it's bipartisan. Now, I saw this statement by Pennsylvania State Senator Andy Dinneman, who is beating up the governor, rightly so, because the governor had an advisory commission report on post-secondary education. In fact, you know, 2012, we're talking 2 years ago, that he's done nothing with. And you look at the... You look at what's going on with the governor's transportation bill that went through, and nothing. Didn't do anything with it for 2 years. And what's frustrating is you got Dinneman out here saying, oh, see, we got to do something on post-secondary education. We need to be putting money into the post-secondary education because, hey, we care about our college students. Yet here Dinneman, the Democrat, here Andy Dinneman out on the front of going, hey, let's figure out a way for state-owned universities to buy their way out of the state system, i.e. Westchester, to buy out of the PASHE system and break up what the state owns. And this jewel that we have of 14 state-run, state-owned universities that's the envy of the world. You've got Dinneman, the Democrat, going, hey, more profit could be made for them over here. And this is the key to destroying public higher ed, just like they're doing to public education. It's all interconnected. And when we were talking to people in Chicago and we were talking to people in Milwaukee, we're saying, what's going on in your neck of the woods? Because you saw this coming. We know that this is coming. That's why it's so very important that we do the hard work of organizing. We do the hard work of talking to our neighbors and standing up for our kids. It is that simple. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought-provoking, opinionated. Rick Smith.
Our government's spending over $10.6 million of your taxes on climate research,
on combating global warming, on the hunch
It's man-made.
A theory that proved to be grounded in little more than hysteria.
This is surprising. You know, I haven't heard on the other channels that some of the glaciers are getting bigger, but that's why people watch Fox.
No.
Yep, it's our special April Fox Day edition of the Green News Report.
Yep, all of that Fox foolery and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and Foxy comment.
Tide goes in, tide goes out. Never miscommunication.
Ah, Fox News and science. Perfect together. This is your Green News Report.
That's why they watch Fox.
Okay, Desi Doyen, before we get to the Fox foolery, in a related item, this fossil fuel-funded group calling itself the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change, or NIPCC, released a report this week at the same time the UN did, trying to undermine that report. Among the things these ExxonMobil-funded folks say, carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. There is little or no risk of increasing food insecurity due to global warming. A modest warming of the planet will result in a net reduction of human mortality from temperature-related events, and that rising CO2 is actually good, not bad, for the planet.
Oh, so it'll all be great and we have nothing to worry about.
Yes, it's all good. Why don't you stop your whining? By the way, this is the same group that also has said for years that secondhand smoking is not bad for you. So that's the kind of science that we're working with there. But how about the kind of science they're working with on Fox News?
Yep, that's the question today. We thought, what better way to start the month of April than to celebrate the fools at Fox News, especially the Fox News Brain Trust when it comes to the planet's most pressing existential concern, global warming and climate change. So today, a quick look back at just a few of our favorite Fox moments from the fossil-fueled fools at Fox News. On March 31st, as you heard, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released its latest report on the coming devastating impacts of climate change, warning that it will get worse and we need to cut our greenhouse gas emissions or push the climate beyond our ability to adapt as a species. But you won't hear that on the number one cable news outlet, Fox News, with their tsunami of disinformation.
There's no science to global warming.
Wait.
And when are the rest of you liberals going to come around and say, you know what, there is no science and we need more time, and the IPCC may be wrong.
There is no science, just thousands and thousands and thousands of pages and studies, not only as released in the latest IPCC report, but that report itself is a survey of thousands of other scientific reports, pretty much all finding the same thing.
And really, what's the point of doing more science when Fox News isn't going to accept that science either? Here's how they describe the IPCC report.
They just take a survey of their friends and they say, here's what we believe, and now it must be true, and they demonize anyone who goes against it. I think the details are very threatening to them. That's why they don't want to look into this more and do more science.
Right. They just take a survey of their friends? Really?
That's Fox News' idea of how science works.
That's what they tell themselves in any case, and of course that's what they tell their millions of viewers.
And of course scientists have warned for decades that climate change will bring more frequent and intense extreme weather events, including snow in winter. But for the fools at Fox News, snow means global warming is a hoax.
It's the most severe winter storm in years, which would seem to contradict Al Gore's hysterical global warming theories.
Now, so I feel bad for Al Gore.
63% of the country is now covered in snow, and it's breaking Al Gore's heart.
I wonder where Al Gore is this morning. That global warming is really taking its toll.
And they offer terrible science. That's not actually science, but stuff that sounds like science.
First of all, CO2 cannot cause global warming. It literally cannot cause global warming.
Actual physicists disagree. So thanks, Joe Bastardi.
So you're going to go with the physicist instead of the TV weather guy that they put on to Fox News?
Oh, yeah. Then there's this classic explaining why solar power is more popular in Germany than in the U.S.
Oh, I love this one. A classic.
What was Germany doing correct? Are they just a smaller country and made it more
possible? They're a smaller country and they've got lots of sun.
Right.
They've got a lot more sun than we do.
Totally, completely, entirely wrong, just like the rest of Fox News' reportage on climate change, on global warming, and yes, on science.
And this is from a major cable news outlet.
This is the majorest cable news outlet, to be frank. No wonder so many of their viewers are so disinformed. And by the way, I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that their second major shareholder is actually a Saudi oil prince. They probably don't mention that to their viewers either, eh?
Probably not.
For much more Fox foolery and actual science this week, please check out our webpage at greennews.bradblog.com. We'll return to actual news later this week. Until then, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your April Fox Day Green News Report.
Looks to me like we're looking at global cooling. Forget this global warming.
What does the fox say? What the fox say?
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Done. Voter ID done.
And why would you want to vote anyway, really? Because the billionaires, they do it so much better, don't they? They're so much better informed. They know what to do with their money. Spend it on buying politicians to deregulate for insane free trade agreements. So much better things than jobs or infrastructure or education for those children. Why would you want to educate them anyway? Well, at least that's what we're told. And thanks to Mike Terzai for that wonderful clip. Today, the big day, the big decision by the guy who said balls and strikes. Yeah, I wonder who paid the Chicago, the people who went to jail and were disgraced under the Chicago Black Sox scandal. They've got to be breathing a lot easier with Supreme Court Justice John Roberts calling of balls and strikes. I hope you liked the Green News Report we've been playing the last couple of days. I had a listener said, hey, why aren't you playing this? I go, I don't know. Maybe we should look into it, which is why we've asked Brad Friedman to come on the program. One of the people who hosted the clip, to come and talk about the work that he and Desi Doyen do, and also about this voter situation, the big money situation. Brad Friedman, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, great to be here, Rick. How are you, sir?
I am fantastic, other than the fact that our democracy is being bought out from under me.
Oh, yeah, there's that. The greatest existential problem facing the planet, everything melting. But other than that, yeah, everything's great here, too, Rick.
Didn't you know it's cold?
Yeah, it's cold in my backyard. Global warming is over. We had some fun with this week's, because, it was April Fool's Day. And how could we avoid turning that into April Fox Day, given that we spend so much of the year listening to their crap, listening to them lie to their viewers about global warming and climate change. So we just said, you know what, the hell with it. We will just devote all of April Fool's Day, because nobody's going to believe us on anything we say on April Fool's anyway. So we'll just, devote everything to Fox News and their lies and their nonsense and their fossil-fueled foolery, as we called it. So that was April Fox Day. We'll turn back to real green news. No doubt tomorrow, but even then, when we do that, we like to have some fun. We like to have a little bit of snark because it's tough. It's scary what's going on out there. So we try to have some fun with it whenever humanly possible.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to starve to death because we can't produce food, you might as well at least be happy and smiling about it.
That's right.
And my favorite part of the whole clip you guys put out was Germany has more sun. When did that happen?
Yes. Oh, I know. This is the sort of thing that they tell viewers. And what's amazing is they tell them so frequently, and they do such a good job with it. They are such accomplished liars that their viewers actually believe this stuff. And, you know, 4 years ago, 8 years ago, you had Republicans like John McCain and Sarah Palin, you know, talking about global warming, talking about their concerns about sea rise and everything else. And now, here we are 5 years later, oh, it's just a conspiracy theory. It's a hoax. It's Al Gore trying to make money. And these people actually believe it. So you've got, you know, the people who are lying to them, most of whom I suspect know better, know that they are telling lies, know that they are passing on fossil fuel propaganda, period, end of story. And then you have millions of listeners, millions of viewers on the most watched cable network who actually now believe this stuff, go out and do their dirty work for them. You know, it's amazing how they attack people who tell them the truth, who give them independently verifiable facts. But that's the game. That's the scam. That's what Fox News is about. And, you know, you mentioned photo ID restrictions. Same thing there. I can't tell you how many years I have been correcting these lies. Oh, you need an ID to get on a plane. You need an ID to buy a beer. No, you don't. No, you don't. But this is what they do. They lie to them, and these people buy it, and they believe it. And now they're buying our elections.
But the reality, Brad, is even if I did, and look, I've needed a driver's license to rent a car. Every time I go to a hotel, can I see your driver's license plate? Because it's the Patriot Act. Even if that's the case, that I have to do these things, I have to have a driver's license, I don't have a constitutionally guaranteed fundamental citizen right. To renting a hotel or driving a car. I do have that right to the ballot box, the bedrock of what our democracy is founded on.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely right. And, by the way, well, you know, it's understandable if they want to ask for a driver's license to drive a car, to rent a car. But guess what? Even in the wake of the Patriot Act, you do not need a photo ID to get on an airplane. It may make your life a lot easier. You won't have to go through the extra questions, the extra search. But if you go to the TSA website, you will see that they have accommodations for those who don't have a driver's license. Because the fact of the matter is, there's about 21 million Americans, otherwise legal voters, who simply do not have driver's licenses. They do not have these type of state-issued photos. And guess what? The commercial airlines are not about to turn away 20 million customers. So you're right. To make the distinction, and it is a distinction, between a right and a privilege, and that's something that I, you know, good luck making these guys understand that. But, you know, just to help them understand that, no, you're also being lied to when it comes to you need an ID to buy a beer. You need an ID to get on a plane. The other thing, by the way, they don't seem to understand is that IDs in and of themselves, most states already require an ID when you go to vote. Yes. Having an ID is not a problem. It's the very specific state-issued IDs that they know that millions of Americans don't have. That's when it becomes a problem. The other thing they don't know, by the way, is that the ID is already required for everybody when they register to vote under the Help America Vote Act, the federal law, all 50 states. You have to show ID when you register, but if you don't register in person, for example, if you do it by mail, then you're flagged, and the first time you go to vote, you will have to show an ID. But again, it's a reasonable ID, not the kind of very strict state-issued photo ID that they know is meant to disenfranchise voters, period.
Yeah, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Brad Friedman. He is the head guy over at Bradblog, bradblog.com. The website, we've got a link at therickssmithshow.com. Just click on Brad's name. Lots of amazing reporting and things going on over there. Also does the green news that we're going to continue to run here on the program that I find extremely informative, and I hope you do too. You know, but Brad, you know, you look at all of this stuff, and today's decision, not surprising, I think, to anyone, just another one of those steps towards complete control by the wealth class. And you could go back, you know, a couple of generations and see the things that have fallen by the wayside, like local ownership. You go back to Clinton's telecom bill in 96 that consolidated our media into the hands of a few, and all of this monopolistic consolidation of power. We're marching down this road to having a handful of people run the country and not even worry about the politicians.
Well, Yeah, you're right again. And this is, and I hate to bring it all back to elections, but all of this really does come back to elections. Elections still matter, even though you've got these guys now trying to buy it off. They have been buying it off. You've got a Federal Election Commission that does absolutely nothing about it, even though, Karl Rove's Crossroads GPS was spending hundreds of millions of dollars going all the way back to 2010 under the guise of being a 501c4 social welfare organization. At least that decision, the recent decision by the FEC, while not being covered really anywhere in the media, we covered it in great detail at bradblog.com, but that's being challenged now in court. We'll see what happens to that. But all of these things, guess what? They come back to elections. You go back. The reason we have this decision today in McCutcheon, the reason we had the decision 4 years ago in Citizens United, is because George Bush, who did not receive more votes than Al Gore in 2000, not only in the country, but also in Florida, because we didn't get to count those votes. He became president. In 2004, massive election irregularities in Ohio. John Kerry didn't bother to challenge them after saying he was going to make sure every vote was counted. He didn't bother. George Bush gets another 4 years, puts in Alito, puts in Roberts. That's why we have the court we have, because we didn't give a damn about these elections in 2000, and specifically in 2004, enough to fight them and to make sure that every vote was counted, counted accurately, and in a way that the citizens could know that it was counted accurately. It all comes back to elections, Rick.
I'm with you, and it comes down to educated, informed, active citizens. But the sad reality is what we've got is a media culture and a structure that tells us government's broken. Oh, they're all crooks, which I think has really done a great job of turning people away. And I point to Wisconsin. You know, I have friends. We 3 years ago, we were sleeping in the Capitol with, 100,000 people, in and around the Capitol. And I made a lot of friends there who said, when the recall election came, they just wanted the pain to stop. All of the ads and inundated with anti-government message and all of this, they just wanted the pain to stop, and they turned it off. And I think when we see all of the stuff that we get from our billionaire class and our political class, I think, especially from the Republicans, it's to turn us away. Our government's broken. There's nothing we can do. Just keep your head down. Stay on the treadmill, and you'll be fine.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the great con of, the great Ronald Reagan con going back, 30 years. Government is not the savior, government is the problem. And, what happened was when you pretend that government is the problem and the private industry does everything better, they don't. They end up doing it costs a lot more. Look at the amount of money that we're still paying to contractors in all of these wars. We've privatized everything, and we've demonized, you're absolutely right, we've demonized government to the point where, they can run out and say, oh, Obamacare is a government takeover of health care. Well, for a start, it is not. It is nothing close to a government takeover of health care. I frankly wish that it was, at least as far as getting the private health insurance industry out of it.
I'm with you.
But, when you demonize government, then you can do everything, and you can get people to vote against their own interests. Walmart is better than any government. And, by the way, work at Walmart, you'll need food stamps. And guess where, when you get those food stamps, guess where you're going to spend them? You're going to spend them at Walmart. So it's this fantastic boondoggle all put in place by Ronald Reagan and this concept that, government is the enemy. Government is us. We are the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And you would think that these Tea Partiers and, just pawns and stooges who have been scammed by this con for so long would be the first ones to understand it. Yeah, government has problems. Let's fix it. Let's be the government. Let's do the right thing. Let's take care of our people instead of handing it all over to the oligarchy.
Yeah, I look at this, though, and it comes back to what we see, what we hear, what we read. All I saw a statistic, a couple years ago, something like 80% of everything we see, hear, and read owned by six multinational corporations.
Yeah.
And you go, when you have that kind of consolidation of power, you got to wonder, what would the founding fathers have thought of that?
Huh. Well, it's ridiculous. It's absurd, and it's almost always getting worse. Now, we have a little bit of good news this week, believe it or not. On Monday, the FCC actually voted to unwind some of the media consolidation that's been going on. They've unwound some of the loophole that has allowed corporations to buy up local TV stations. So big TV stations buying smaller ones, you know, in a lot of places they'll run the same newscasts on both. That's actually in violation of federal law. And finally, we've got a new chairman recently at the FCC who seems willing to enforce at least that much. So finally, I don't think I've ever said it, but hey, good for the FCC. First time I think I've ever said that in my life. Let's see if they continue to unwind it, but they likely won't, because you mentioned the Telecom Act. Who was that? That was Bill Clinton. That was a Democrat. So between Reagan killing the Fairness Doctrine, Clinton allowing everything to be bought out by, like you said, a handful of corporations, a Democrat doing that. Where are the good progressives standing up and saying, no, that's not the government that we, the people, want. We want oversight. We want regulation. That's not a bad thing. I ain't falling for the 30-year-old Ronald Reagan con.
No, and as much as you may or like or dislike President Obama, here's a guy suggesting chain CPI for Social Security and selling off the TVA, which you go, really? Where are the progressives in all this? Which brings me back to today's decision. It's about the money, because as much money as the Republicans are getting from Wall Street and corporate special interests, so are Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Well, not as much, but I take your point. I mean, they're certainly working with these huge corporations. They're not getting the kind of money that, frankly, that the Republicans get. Remember, this was the Republican Party was the plaintiff in this thing. They joined the case with McCutcheon. And going back to Citizens United, that was a big Republican group as well. That was the Republican group that spent millions to put Clarence Thomas, by the way, on to the Supreme Court and then have him vote in favor of them.
Yeah.
So,
Democrats,
I mean, their hands are not clean here by any means, and I've got a lot of problems with Democrats, but when it comes to standing up for the progressive ideals, I don't give a damn, frankly, if the Republicans or the Democrats are with us. We need to be able to stand up for what's right and what's a progressive ideal that will move this country forward, no matter who is with us, even if a Republican wants to join along, which probably ain't going to happen these
days. So last question I've got for you. What do we do then? What's the, you know, I've been saying we get behind things like Move to Amend, try to get money out of politics, but more importantly, we talk to our neighbors. We talk to our coworkers while we still can before the Pennsylvania Republicans make talking to your coworkers stalking. We talk to our friends and neighbors. We've got to organize.
Well, Tom Corbett, he's on his way out, right?
I hope.
Idiot Governor Tom Corbett.
The most vulnerable Republican governor in the country 9 months in a row.
Yeah, not only that, frankly, he's dumb as dirt. I think that just needs to be said out loud. Dumb as dirt. This is the guy who was claiming that the reason you guys out there in Pennsylvania needed photo ID restrictions at the polling place was because in some precincts, he said there was 110% voter turnout. Completely untrue. A complete lie. And his own government had to admit, when they were challenged on photo ID, that we don't know of any cases of polling place impersonation that have ever happened in Pennsylvania or anywhere else, for that matter, in history. That was, that was his defense of the law. So he's on his way out. But listen, what do? You do what you're doing, Rick. You get on the air, you raise hell, you let people know what's going on, and you don't be cowed. And you don't be cowed, by the way, even by Democrats. And this idea that, oh, we can't criticize Barack Obama for what's going on with the NSA and the blatant lying about it that's been going on for years. We need to stand up for ideals, not for any particular party. And I don't think that, in the end, hurts the Democrats. I think it helps the Democrats, because there's a lot of disillusioned people out there who will say, yeah, I can get behind that. I can get behind that ideal. I'm going to stand for that. And when they see these people standing up, they join them, and they join who those people might be standing for. So don't be cowed. Get behind the principles, not the party, and hold the party accountable. Make them give you something to vote for.
There you go. Outstanding advice. Brad Friedman, I appreciate the time. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again in the near future.
I'd be happy to anytime, and delighted to have you guys as our newest Green News Report affiliate. Really appreciate it, Rick.
Thanks so much, Brad. Enjoy the work you do. Of course, the website, bradblog.com. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Brad's name. It'll take you right there. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You'll listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents, you may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Tales of American Political History with Clinton Porter Hackney.
We've been talking about military photographer Bill Jones and his end-of-war mission to photograph Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The officers accompanying him were energized by curiosity and sensed the importance of the mission. But the 20-year-old photographer said he didn't think about the significance of what he was doing at the time. He was just doing his job. Yet he did have some feel for the historical importance of what was going on just from being around the older officers. Enough so that he did something significantly different in his photo development procedures. He would move negatives through trays of fluids, a shortstop bath, removal of unexposed silver, and then add military data and information that included secret classification. But this time, he made himself a pre-official print to keep with no secret classification, then printed the official versions. Join us again for the classified photos. This is Clinton Porter Hackney at cphackney.com.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Saw an interesting story that caught my attention. Kind of a history buff. I kind of like knowing about what happened in the past. You know, the presidents of the past, especially the guy who was the shortest, the short-termer, I guess made a whole month in the White House, died back in 1841. The good president Harrison, William Henry Harrison, for those who don't know. They claim he had died from pneumonia. That's been the history. Died from pneumonia because he gave too long of a speech in the cold, or so we were told. Now they're saying, maybe not. In fact, what they're saying he died from was this enteric fever. Evidently, something in the swamps of Washington, something in the water supply made him sick. And it got so bad it killed him. Pneumonia, much secondary. And it makes got to be thinking, did they know what it was and just didn't want to scare people? And they were hiding that even back then? Kind of makes you wonder. Anyway, let's find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and around the world. Bob Ney, Talk Radio News Service. Bob, what's on your mind?
Well, I think there's still something bad in the water.
It must be. All kinds of insanity goes on there. But I was thinking about this today in light of now we officially know the NSA has been spying on us, and now we officially know that somebody's looking over our shoulders. And you got to wonder how much of what we're told throughout our lives is actually true, or if it's just, it's good. It's good messaging.
Well, this is the first time that the NSA has turned around and said, yes, we use the backdoor technique. So what they did was they looked at the surveillance law and said, okay, Rick Smith and Bob Ney are sending emails to Germany. Therefore, we don't need a warrant to look at Rick Smith and Bob Ney because they're, transmitting this information. So we'll just go ahead and take a look at them without a warrant. So they went completely contrary, one would say, line to to what they have said earlier, which is, you know, that they're not doing that. And then they were just taking a little information. We know they mined everything on Earth that they could get their hands on. So, and it just continues. I just can't understand why the people that lied about weapons of mass destruction were not, you know, something wasn't done with them, prison or fired at least. And I really can't understand this crew of how they're keeping their jobs. I mean, James Clapper just keeps changing the story as the as this morphs along.
No, I mean, it's amazing that, and look, I think there should be people getting some bracelets. Lock them up.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But yeah. I guess it just shows how much we're willing to put up with. I talked to a couple people today, and they just kind of threw their hands up and went, well, you know, you've been saying it for years. You know they're doing it. Why are you surprised? And I'm going, I'm not surprised. I'm outraged.
But it's, I don't know. It's just a continuation, and hopefully the president will have a piece of legislation, and they'll actually be able to do something. I still think, Rick, there are rogue elements that will still do as they please,
sure,
unless you find a way to watch them and contain them.
But, I mean, that's one thing. You're always going to have that. But being at the policy of the United States government to, one, do this kind of stuff, and then, two, lie about it, that's where I have a problem. And this, to me, just isn't Obama. This was going back to Bush. This was going back to Clinton. All of this, none of this is new. The technology may be a little newer, but none of this spying stuff, I don't think, is new.
Well, it's not, and the members of Congress who, you know, all of a sudden show an outrage, you know, about this happening, well, they voted for the Patriot Act knowing that was a wide-open ballgame, and it was under Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who Republicans knew how bad he was. They didn't want him in there. You know, Bush kept him until he finally got booted out. And then they created the FISA court. Well, one would say, well, why'd you create the FISA court? Well, it's because that really gives an impartial look. And the words rubber stamp were, you know, used all the time, and they did rubber stamp. And if you look at the Senate speech of Senator Feingold, the only senator to vote against the Patriot Act, if you listen to his speech on YouTube, you know, he warns that this Patriot Act is so wide open. So, you know, he gave some warnings on the floor long while back.
That's because he actually read it, and I remember, and I talk about it often, right when it was being passed, I remember going to a debate that the League of Women Voters had put on when I lived in Allentown. And there were, and I remember this like it was yesterday. There were three people on each side, three for, three against. The three people for it had read the talking points. The three people who were against it actually took the time and read every word of the law, and they were flipping through the pages going, right here, this is the problem. And then the people on the other side who were for it were going, well, we just need to be safe. And that was how it was sold to us. This is going to keep us safe. Anything to keep us safe. And of course, you know, not make us take our shoes off at the airport. We need to do. And that's how it was force fed to the American people, that this is the only way. This is the only way your children will be safe.
When I voted against it, there were three of us on the Republican side, 63 on the Democratic side, 66 of us total. When I voted against that, Rick, it was very lonely up there, three red lights, me, Ron Paul, and Butch Otter, who's now a governor. And I remember a couple of the members said to me, you're going to lose your election. And I said, this bill is a piece of junk. And they said, well, we know that, but you're going to lose your election. And that was our conversation.
Wow.
About the substance.
And you didn't.
Oh, excuse me, I did.
And good.
I explained it back home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't support Osama bin Laden, but I explained this wasn't the way to get him.
I mean, it's the wave that seems to sweep over us. And I look at the wave that seems to be sweeping over us right now. All of this billionaire cash, all of these wealthy donor cash, and I see the decision today by the Supreme Court going, yeah, go ahead. Koch brothers, go ahead. Adelson, go ahead. All you want. God bless you.
This decision is bizarre also in the sense that it, in fact, excuse me, I guess I'm in my throat, the fact that it allows for individuals to still be contained in what they give, but not the rich guys.
I mean, you can't help but laugh at that, Bob. I mean, it's now gotten so farcical that all you can really do is laugh.
Well, it has opened the floodgates on money in such a way that we've really never seen before. There's enough money in the system, but this one just opens it wide. But I don't know how they justify saying the cap is off, but an individual citizen, you're remaining at the $2,600 limit to members of Congress because, you know, you're an individual citizen. Just to give a hypothetical here, and it'll apply to Pennsylvania, Ohio, and most states. Just to put this in perspective, under this new change, if you're a wealthy man or woman in Pennsylvania, you'll be able now to put about $3.6 million in the system that you couldn't put before. That's about the best way to explain this, because you now can give to multiple PACs. It used to be a cutoff of $122,000, so once you aggregated and you gave over here, it totaled $122,000 and kind of created a wall. Now this will allow you to give up to about $3.6 million.
Wow.
That you couldn't give before. Let's take that times just 10 people. That's $30 million plus.
And, you know, what gets me about this is, you know, it's one thing to buy one congressman or buy one representative with $120,000 or whatever it is. Now you've got the ability to spread it around and make more people beholden to this. I had a friend who was a congressman who, you may remember Phil Hare from Illinois. A good labor guy, good, decent, hardworking guy. And he said, you know, the reality is I'm on the phone all the time, always asking for money. From the day you get elected to the next election, you're always with your hand out going, I need re-election money. And he said, nobody ever bought my vote, but you got my ear. Because while I'm asking you for money, you're making your pitch. And you hear that pitch over and over and over again, and it might begin to sway you.
Well, we went towards, on my own personal case, I went towards Jack Abramoff, who got in trouble, and I got in trouble with him. And I went towards him, not, you know, so he could buy me dinner. I mean, I should have, but I didn't care about that. We needed the money guy's eyes, Tom DeLay. He didn't care for me, and we needed his support. And who was his big, big sugar daddy? Was Jack Abramoff. So, you know, we followed the money trail to, you know, not be attacked by Tom DeLay.
Jeez.
It's just it's a money trail, and now it's on steroids. And I really, if you look at Justice Brewer's dissent on it, he just point blank says, you know, the integrity of the entire system is up for grabs.
And it's just, to me, at some point we need, are you going to run for Congress again?
Well, that's funny. I'm down in Ohio, and I'm going to give a talk tomorrow and say that I'm not, because it'll come up. I've been, the newspaper publicly down here in Ohio had said, you know, you need to run again. And I thought about it. I had so many people that called me, and I would have ran as an independent against the Democrat and the Republican. But I just don't think at this point in time I could make a whole lot of difference. I think the system's so dysfunctional that I can't even recognize it anymore.
Wow. And it's to me, it's not until you get the money out of it that it can ever change.
Something's going to have to happen. Yeah. It's just an ugly place.
Let's talk about some of the else ugly. Benghazi. Really? At some point, don't we go that, okay, we've done this enough. It's a horrible, horrible tragedy. Let's figure out how to fix it instead of what this looks like to me is more, hey, you know, let's just keep it alive to make a black eye on the president.
Well, I think it even goes farther towards, you know, Hillary. Those who fear Hillary Clinton in 2016 are hoping this is the, you know, the silver bullet. But today's revelation was that the acting director, Mike Morrell, he said not intentionally, but he had not listened to the on-ground station CIA chief, who didn't indicate terrorists, but didn't indicate protesters, the way I read this thing. And he took it upon himself to say protesters. But what's interesting about this is the CIA, it's not the State Department, okay, it's not the White House. He didn't brief Susan Rice, our ambassador to the UN, for the Sunday shows. I mean, the guy admits, you know, he didn't intentionally, but he made a mistake, but it doesn't have legs back to who they think it has legs to. And of course, some people heard the same information today and then came out and said, well, maybe we ought to have a special investigation. You know, I mean, Congressman ISIS had enough of them, so.
I mean, had we spent the money that we've spent on investigating it, had we spent that money on making sure that they had enough people there, or had spent the resources that needed to be spent and intelligence to find out, maybe you could have possibly prevented it. I don't know. I'm not the expert on this, but I figure if maybe we've spent some of the time and the energy into making sure that those things don't happen, as we've put into going after and who to point the finger at.
It's like Whitewater, where you had Ken Starr, you had a special prosecutor, you know, and it ended up that the House investigated it. I happened to have been on that committee. And after a while, in fact, I was part of pulling the money plug on it. You know, Dan Burton had some initial money, the congressman from out in Indiana, and he didn't find anything. Now, at the end of the day, they got Webb Hubble for 30 years ago not billing something correctly, literally. You know, and Webb was the fall guy, you know.
Someone had to fall on the sword.
Yeah, and as Webb told me one time, he said, never be best friends with the president. Help you. So, you know, after a while, they thought there was something there. They knew from the staff that there really wasn't, but it still kept going until it finally pulled the plug on it. With this Benghazi thing, it's just not going to have legs.
Yeah. Also, I understand the Senate is moving, trying to move on helping the long-term unemployed. What's going on with that?
Well, they're trying to help the long-term unemployment situation. The Republicans are saying, well, you know, you don't have enough economic stimulus in there, wherewithal within it. So I'm not sure what they want to do with it, but I think that it's a smart move by the leader in the Senate, by Harry Reid, and I think it's, you know, keep the issue out there because maybe there'll be enough pressure that it'll, you know, pass. The economy hasn't gained steam. I mean, the Republicans were smart, Rick. They would be out there saying, you know what? This president's really made a mess of this economy. I feel bad for people, and we need to extend it.
Yep. Add a stimulus, and we need to do infrastructure spending.
That would be the line.
I mean, that's where I would go. And finally, I saw this story. Maybe you can explain it to me. We're talking about releasing a spy?
Yes, I happened to have been in Israel a while back with Congressman Paul Kanjorski, who was from Pennsylvania. And a very, let me just put it this way, intense conversation occurred between Congressman Kanjorski and Netanyahu and myself, because Netanyahu was on his way the next day to see President Clinton, and he said, I'm going to ask him to pardon a spy named Michael Pollard. And we both went crazy, and I must give Congressman Kanjorski credit. He really went out on this thing. And just to add to it, Senator Feinstein is no fan of this deal at all. Now, Pollard, to put it short, he was a spy. He's serving a life sentence for espionage in the United States. And every president for, you know, 30 years has said we are not going to release him. He had suitcases of information. He was the Ben Snowden of his era. And he had suitcases of information that he took to Israel, and he spied on us, and just, you know, he had highly classified documents, and they had the names of the operating intelligence agents. So members of Congress, most of them, consider that he was responsible for the death of several of our agents and set us back with intelligence decades. So now there are some pretty strong rumors that, you know, I picked up in talking to people in D.C. today, but pretty strong rumors that we may, in fact, by April the 14th, potentially release him from prison in America. He would go back to Israel, and in turn, they would start the peace talks up again, the Israelis, but also they're going to release some Palestinian terrorists. So I don't know who gains what out of this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting chess match where, you know, you go, really? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
If you let the bad guys go, we'll let the bad guy go.
Yeah, all you're doing is letting bad guys go.
Bad guys go.
Jeez.
I don't know what's going to happen with it, but I don't know if they want these talks that bad that they're going to do it, but it will cause a firestorm. Of outrage.
As it should, Bob. We'll most certainly be keeping an eye on that, Bob. I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much. Bob Nay, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. More working people. Come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Salvatore Calalori. With Obamacare signups surpassing the administration's goal of 7 million signups, it's now clear that the enrollment was an unmitigated success. But Fox News has been working for months to undermine the ACA, and they have continued to downplay positive news about Obamacare now that the goal has been met. On The 5, Fox's Jesse Waters attempted to undermine positive news about Obamacare.
I actually think the White House is straight up lying about these numbers. They're saying 7 million people signed up on the website that was broken for the last 9 months.
Charles Krauthammer did the same on Fox News' special report.
Look, this is a phony number. It's meaningless because, A, we don't know how many of them have paid.
But these talking points are all too predictable. On CNN's Reliable Sources, guest Elise Vibeck commented,
"It's interesting, Fox News in particular constantly asks at any point when Obamacare news is reported, well, how many people have paid? And certainly we note that in all of our articles, how many people have paid, you know, 80, 90%.
For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't stop the sounds of the truth. Locked off the dead, that's a wreck. Why can't let my spirit? You can't kill the protesters. Can't kill. You can't kill the protesters. You can't murder the rebel. Murder. You can't murder the rebellion.
Well, you can't kill the protesters. Not yet, anyway. Not yet. We can buy their votes. We can't kill them yet. Not yet. Not until, look, you know, you got to go well down the road before you can start killing the protesters. We can beat them up. We can mace them. We can shoot them with the goodbye gun that makes them want to vomit uncontrollably or feel like they're being microwaved. We can do those things, but not kill them. At least not right away. You know, if you tase them and they fall over, well, it's their own fault. Weak heart. Man, I'll tell you, today, I'm still wrapping my head around this McCutcheon decision. But again, this is wealth class 57. You, me, the rest of us, nothing. This is us losing again. This is us, we the people, again, on the short end of another decision. Now remember, this is balls and strikes. This is what... And I remember watching John Roberts say it. Decided law, we're not going after changing things. Well, the law is what the law is, and we're just going to follow the law. Balls and strikes. Stare decisis. It's decided law, we're just calling balls and strikes. And I've kind of thought about it. You know, maybe those Shoeless Joe and the rest of them who threw the World Series back during the Chicago Black Sox years, you know, maybe they can now rest easier because this guy's worse. Man, a lot of work to do. Lots of things to do. And when we come back from Pittsburgh next week, a lot of things I want to try and get into and get started on. The organizing, the activism, we've got to step it up. You and me and all of us. If things are going to change, if things are going to get better, we are going to have to make them better. And I really appreciate you tuning into the program. Love the emails. Love the thoughts. But we need to be coming together. We need to be fighting more. We need to be more involved. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you get the podcast, Stitcher, smartphone. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
It's coming.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial on the sea.